Outlaws with Rebecca Hargraves and Devin Stack.
All right. Welcome to another exciting episode of Outlaws
with Rebecca Hargraves and Devin Stack. I got to get it out of my brain.
So yeah. Anyway.
Boy, we've got something to talk about today.
Yeah. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope everyone's having a good, yeah, it's crazy. May is almost, well, it's on its way out already, right? We're May 20th.
How hot is it there?
It's actually pretty nice still, weirdly. I think in about 5 days, that'll be over for about 3.5 months, you know.
But your living situation is my hell. I would get heat stroke every single day.
It's not bad.
No.
Well, I'll tell you, what about the winters?
White people are not acclimated for the desert. What are you doing there?
But white people have the ability to create technologies that allow us to adapt to any environment the white man decides to plant his flag.
You have not had air conditioning for, like, years.
Well, I got AC now. It's kind of nice.
Kind of nice? Oh, my God. If it's not 69 degrees in my house year-round, I lose my shit. I'm going to do so badly when society falls. I will die first. I'll be like, oh, it's 80 degrees outside. I'm just going to fall over dead.
Well, your body changes. So like, I'd say if it starts to get below even like 75, I start putting on coats and like scarves and shit.
Oh God. So, I don't know why, but that makes me hate you.
Yeah. You know, it's cause I'm tougher and more powerful.
Well, how do you do in cold weather?
Just as good, of course, obviously.
Oh, okay.
I just realized
that's fine,
then. You're talking to a black screen. I just realized my little thing isn't working.
I'm always talking to a black screen.
Yeah, but soon you'll be talking to like a fancy logo that is moving to the sound of my voice. Let's see here.
That's not much improved.
There we go. Look at that.
There we go. I'm yet to get Devin to turn his camera on. I'm always like, turn your camera on. He's like, no, I have to wire it to the blit-a-dud. It's not a like, whatever, fine.
I have security measures here that cannot be circumvented. Even Netanyahu puts a sticker over his camera on his phone, something that everyone should do.
We're all out there. It's time.
Yeah. Well, anyway, today we're talking about the, some would say the Central Park Five, and some would say the Exonerated Five.
And they would be incorrect because they were vacated. They were not exonerated. Boy, what? I thought I knew about this crime until I really got into it. I was like, I always thought they were guilty, but I knew nothing about this crime. I didn't know how guilty they were. I have no sympathy for people that fell for this one. No sympathy.
Zero. Yeah. It didn't even give you any kind of like flashbacks to like
West Memphis 3?
Yeah.
No, because I actually thought that they were innocent for quite a while. I was really sold on that one. I think at some point I actually donated to the Innocence Project.
Oh my God.
But it was like 15 years ago. Throw me a bone here.
Well, I'll tell you what. The Innocence Project, they're the ones responsible for things like this. You know, they're the ones that are behind this, obviously. And
it's such bullshit. I was looking into false confession rates, and a lot of that data comes from the Innocence Project. And like, you can't base the levels of false confessions on data from the Innocence Project. They are evil. They are an evil, evil organization that gets guilty people that there's tons of evidence against out of jail for serious crimes based on public pressure. They need to be disbanded.
Well, they need to be thrown in jail themselves. So anyway, let's, we're going to have to get in a time machine. So let's hang on a second. We're going to go to our little time machine. There we go. Now we're in 1989. And, cause a lot of people, in fact, probably a lot of our listeners weren't even alive in 1989. 1989 was, especially in New York City, was not a nice time. I mean, it was, I guess, if you worked in Wall Street, you know what I mean? Like, you were doing pretty good. But unless you lived on Wall Street or worked in Wall Street and lived in, like, the fancy parts of town, it was a hellscape.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
And it was a hellscape where, I mean, think about all the movies like Escape from New York and shit like that, that they produced for, like around this time period. They did that for a reason. They did that because it was very dystopian. They didn't really have to use their imaginations too much.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to see a little AI voice clip. Sorry about that. But I couldn't find a lot of really good footage. I saw like individual crimes, bodies getting carried out of houses and some of the crack and stuff like that. But I wanted to see the roving gangs. I couldn't find any footage of the roving gangs. That's what I really wanted. But it was just a nightmare. It was like a post-apocalyptic wasteland. There was just open prostitution, especially in Times Square. There were pimps. People were getting murdered left, right, and sideways. The crack epidemic had totally swept through the entire city. And then gentrification was happening kind of strangely. So there would be one building filled with crackheads, and then the next building would be like the nicest boutiques. Some of the stuff happened on like Madison Avenue and the Upper East Side, which is, you know, now one of the most exclusive neighborhoods in New York, was a total shithole.
Yeah. And so let's play this little clip to kind of set the stage, I guess, to give you like an idea of what it would be like if you were chilling in New York in 1989.
At the heart of New York's descent was the crack epidemic, a crisis that turned some neighborhoods into war zones. Crack wasn't just another drug. It was cheap, highly addictive, and utterly destructive. By the mid-80s, it had spread like wildfire, gripping communities across Harlem, the Bronx, and Brooklyn. The effects were immediate and devastating. Families were torn apart as addiction spread through homes, leaving children abandoned or raised by the streets. Violence exploded as rival drug gangs fought for territory, and soon, even innocent bystanders became victims. The statistics were terrifying. In 1980, New York recorded over 1,800 murders, but by the decade's end, that number had skyrocketed to more than 2,200, the highest in the city's history. Carjackings became so frequent that people drove through red lights at night rather than stop and risk being pulled from their cars at gunpoint. Store owners were forced to install metal grates over their businesses to prevent looting. In some areas, entire apartment buildings were abandoned, taken over by squatters and drug dealers.
Ah, sounds great.
Yeah. I sent you a little clip that I thought was so funny, but the subways were the worst place. So there's no man's land down there. And I saw this clip from the early 80s where this guy had robbed a bunch of people, and then he got robbed on the subway. So that's what it was. I mean, people were having, they had like decoy wallets and all this stuff. Nobody reported muggings. It was just part and parcel of living in the city, but it really was back then.
Yeah, it wasn't like the Seinfeld 90s. New York that people grew to love. And honestly, that's why they elected Giuliani, who was a Republican. You know, that's why New York City finally had enough and they said, all right, we'll get this authoritarian type. Well, I mean, slightly more authoritarian. That's why they started doing stop and frisk and all this other stuff, because the NIGs were out of control, basically.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And a note on the homicide. So 2,200 homicides a year. That is a staggering number. It sounds like it's not that many. It is six a day during this era. And there were only 7 million people living in New York at the time. Now there are like, I think 19 or 20 million. St. Louis, for a point of reference, the most dangerous city in America outside of Baltimore, maybe Detroit, they had 140 homicides in 2025. And that is like shocking. And I think that their peak was around, I don't know, 600. So, I mean, even adjusted for population, 2,200 is a crazy number of homicides annually. And I don't even know what the rape statistics are.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't think, yeah, that'd be, it's probably, is there even the recorded rape statistics for that era?
Let me see.
Because that's got to be insane.
This was 89, right?
Yeah. 89.
There were 5,300 reported forcible rapes in New York City.
Yeah, so 5,000 rapes in a year.
And that's the reported ones. I mean, some probably are the one reported, yeah.
But one of those rapes took place on April 19th, 1989. It started out with a bunch of black people deciding to go wilding. I don't know if you guys have heard this term. They like to go wilding. It's a term that's still used today, by the way. It's not an outdated term. It means let's go commit violence.
Yep.
Let's just random violence. We'll rob people, beat people up, rape people, burn stuff. And, you know, most of you guys are familiar with the George Floyd riots. Yeah, but that's wilding, I guess, so, you know, to a degree. And they decided to go out wilding on April 19th, 1989 in Central Park. And Central Park, a lot of people don't realize this. Central Park is huge.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's gigantic. And so even if you live in a nice part of town, well, especially in 1989, right, Central Park might be right next to where you live, but another part of Central Park is right next to where the Nigs live.
Yeah.
And so it's like an evil forest where if you go in at night, the Nigs will be lurking in this evil forest. But a lot of people, you know, I guess that don't have that sense of don't relax about them, decide to go jogging and riding their bikes and this sort of a thing at night. You know, to be fair, the sort of things you should be able to do, but you can't do if you live in a diverse reality. And so right around 9 o'clock at night, a group of over 30 black and Hispanic men went into the park to go wilding, and they started assaulting people, and it wasn't long before lots of police calls started to come in. So this is a few of the police calls.
We just got a call about disorderly group, about 30 to 40 males inside Central Park tackling disorderly and harassing people.
Pick up of an assault at 102 and East Drive in Central Park. It's a roving band.
A roving gang.
Now that would be seen as so racist, but that is what they were. I've heard estimates of up to 50 people, but it seems like it was probably around 30 in this specific group. Yeah.
Yeah. So they walked into the park. They just started beating up people that they saw. And when I say beating up, I mean beating up severely, injuring them to the point of unconsciousness and hospitalization. And so they one of the cases was, in fact, a couple on a tandem bike that, I mean, it sounds like it's out of a cartoon a little bit, like they're on a tandem bike, but they escaped the Nigs. And it's kind of interesting, this little clip that I found, this is from ABC's 2020. One of the blacks involved with this, almost, he has like a look of like fond, like he's remembering, like, you know, oh, I remember that time when we tried to rape and murder that couple on the tandem bike. Like, he's got this smile on his face, like, oh, that was funny.
I don't know who it was, but one person said, get them.
All of a sudden, they jumped across the road.
It was actually terrifying. They were ripping at my arms and legs and clothing.
Yeah, here's the look. Look at it. He's just like, oh, I remember that time where we attacked them white folks trying to murder them. So that was one of the attacks that took place. They chased after this couple on a tandem bike. We got more. There's more police calls talking
these
about
idiot whites. Though they're like, oh, let's go out on our tandem bike on a beautiful ride through Central Park, which they used to call Needle Park in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, and it wasn't because of pine needles, you know.
Yeah.
It's, let's go. Yeah, let's go on our tandem bike and ride around in haunted Nig Forest.
So that's what they should have called it.
Seriously. And so here, more calls started to come in about attacks on joggers.
The jogger that there's males attacking joggers on the reservoir in the vicinity of 96th Street and the East Drive, okay?
96th and the East Drive is where the roving band is camped?
Apparently, Central.
I like how even the dispatcher is calling them the roving band.
And she's black, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll find a lot of people in law enforcement, in this instance, are black, which will be contrary to a narrative that comes in later, as I'm sure most of you are anticipating. One guy was attacked viciously in the head. This is the call for one of the calls from that.
We have the APs have a serious head injury on this complaint. Can you have a bus respond forthwith to 95 East Drive?
And so he's bleeding profusely from his head. This is the lead investigator of the case. He's also part black. You can tell he's got quite a bit of white admixture, which accounts for his light skin and higher IQ. But he talks about how he witnessed these people in the process of doing their attacks. He was responsible for making some of the arrests that they made that night.
The victim looked like his head got dunked in a bucket of blood. He was beaten so badly.
They had fractured his eye sockets. In fact, his eyes were almost beat out of his head. He was a former Marine, I believe. So you had that. And then you have, here's another call in regards to that incident.
Essentially, you got an ECM on that bus. This guy has a serious head injury. He's losing a lot of blood here.
Yeah, so people, these are serious, serious, serious wounds. People in danger of dying here. So then we have, I don't know if you wanted to go through, or let's see here. Yeah, you want to go through the individual victims before we get to the main attraction here.
Oh, correction, because someone in the live chat is pissed. Needle Park was Sherman Square on Broadway on the Upper West Side. I said that because I heard an interview from somebody that grew up in New York, and they were saying that that's what they called Central Park. I was unaware that I was incorrect about this. I'm sorry. For fuck's sake, do your homework. We did so much homework on this.
You have no idea how much homework.
Just an incredible amount of homework. Okay, so this woman, she obviously was not the only victim that night. It was eight others who were attacked, and then the two men that you mentioned were the most savagely beaten. The one that you mentioned, John Laughlin, he was knocked to the ground, kicked, punched, beaten with a pipe and stick. He was left unconscious, bleeding profusely. Like that guy said, it looked like he was dunked in a bucket of blood. He was hospitalized for 2 days, and they were not life-threatening injuries, but some of the other people easily could have died. David Lewis, he was a commercial banker. He was robbed around 9:20, and he had similar physical injuries. There were a few other people, Robert Garner, he was a corporate research. He was hit in the head with a rock and punched. And then another guy, David Good, also hit in the head and punched. He ended up escaping. Yeah.
And
go ahead.
Well, and to reiterate, that this is literally, it was 30 to 40 black and Hispanic men, and by men, I mean, they were young too. They were like ages 13 to 18.
They were just children, Devin.
Yeah. And in high school or in school, they planned this. This was a pre-planned event that night they were going to go to Central Park and beat up white people. Like,
yeah.
That's basically what it was. They were going to go to Central Park and beat up the rich white people and attack them. And it wasn't necessarily to get money out of them, because I don't think there was really any robberies. It was mostly just assaults. I mean,
there were robberies. Yeah.
I mean, they stole stuff too, but I mean, that I don't think that was the intent. You know, like, there's easier ways to rob people.
It was more like an initiation, a hoodlum initiation ritual.
Right. Yeah. And so they were just going there and just beating the shit out of people. And they were quite literally a roving band. Mm-hmm. And one of the joggers was a young woman who was jogging through Central Park. I believe this is a report talking about her. Let's see here.
This morning, the woman jogger was found unconscious and bleeding by two men passing by at about 2 o'clock this morning. We're told she was taken to Metropolitan Hospital, where she's being treated for a fractured skull and a serious loss of blood.
And by serious loss of blood, it's 3/4 of her blood.
She lost 80% of her blood, and they're massively downplaying the head injury. She had two massive skull fractures, a subdural hematoma, and her eye was so badly beaten that I read one report that it had basically popped out of her head, and another report that it had been beaten into her head and was being absorbed by her orbital bone, that it was just destroyed inside her orbital bone. I saw a picture of her from today, and she looks a little wonky still.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, and her body was, they didn't find her initially. So
no, they didn't find her until 1 or 2 a.m., and they were not expecting her to survive.
Right. Because after what happened was, they showed up, they rounded up some of the youths, as they say, and they took them downtown, and someone else just happened to hear her making some sounds down in this ravine And they went to investigate and saw that she was in a pool of blood and just barely alive. They hauled her to the hospital. And then all of a sudden, the investigation that initially, because you got to remember, in the context of New York, with that level of crime that's going on all the time, this wasn't seen as a big deal until they found her. Yeah. It was just seen as like another night in New York, you know?
And that is an important note. We'll talk about this later. But they were arrested before they even knew about her. They were arrested for John Laughlin. And some of them were convicted on some of these other assaults. So, like, they definitely, nobody can dispute. This is why they didn't touch this in the Ken Burns documentary, my foot.
Yeah.
It is absolutely undeniable that they were responsible for some of the assaults that night.
Right, right. So let's see here. Let's talk about do you want to talk about who they were?
Sure. All right, we've got Antron McCrae. Antron. I was calling him Antoine all week.
Because who names their kid Antron?
Well, I thought that you were making like a funny black joke by calling him Antron, but that's actually his name. He gave a videotaped confession, which we're going to talk about.
Look at that youth.
He's just a youth.
He's 15, and he looks like, that doesn't look like any 15-year-old. I mean, he's got a goatee.
I know, right? Do you know how we don't have mental retardation? We don't uphold mental retardation statutes when it comes to black people and their IQ and crime. I mean, shouldn't we do the same kind of thing where we compensate them for their adjusted age? Like, this guy's 15. He's 30. That guy's 30. The other one, there's a 14-year-old who looks like he's 25. Like, if you're black and you're above 12, try it as an adult. Try him as an adult.
There
should be no discussion about this. So he was convicted of rape, assault, robbery, and riot, later acquitted of attempted murder. He served 6 to 7 years in juvenile facilities. And now he lives in Georgia with his wife and 6 children. I wonder if they're all from the same woman. All right. Then we got Kevin Richardson.
He's 14.
14, yeah.
Looks like a linebacker.
He's the youngest. I think he was the one that said, like, oh, no, it was Yousef. But he said, like, I was 15 or 16, but I really was, 12. I'm like, what? What are you talking about, man? He also gave a videotape confession. He was convicted on attempted murder, rape, assault, robbery, 5 to 7 years in juvie. And now he's living in Jersey with his wife and daughters, and he's active in criminal justice reform and speaking engagements. Then we've got Yousef. Oh, God.
Yeah,
looks like he has no brain in the back part of his head. That's his haircut. But
yeah, he's one of them foreign blacks. Like, I don't know what country. I think maybe Haiti, maybe Jamaica. I don't know.
Ears are. Look at those tiny little ears. Dude. He did not give a full videotape confession, but he massively incriminated himself. He was convicted of rape, assault, robbery, and riot. He spent 7 years in jail. Now he's an advocate for justice reform, served on the Innocence Project board. He received an award from President Obama, and he was elected to the New York City Council representing Harlem in 2023. And get this, he's the father of, guess how many? 10 children.
10.
This guy has 10 kids.
Oh, he's from Barbados, by the way.
Ah, there it is. Okay.
All right, next up.
Raymond Santana, he was 14. He did give a video confession. He was convicted of rape, assault, robbery, and riot. He was the one that I watched the entire confession of. It was very incriminating. And he's in Georgia with his daughter, and he runs a clothing line.
Is this one of those base Latinos I keep hearing about?
Yeah, totally. And he's engaged in motivational speaking and reform advocacy. All these people turn this into a career. And then we've got the famous Corey Weiss. This guy, he was 16. He accompanied Yousef to the police station as a friend, and then he ended up being questioned. He did give a videotape confession, tried as an adult, convicted of assault, sexual abuse, and riot, served 13 years because he was tried as an adult, and he is also a public speaker in New York and founder, supporter of the Corey Weiss Innocence Project at the University of Colorado Law School.
And no frontal lobe, judging by
look
the picture
at that.
There.
Where's his brain pan? What's in there? Jeez.
Oh, boy. Then we got that's the five. So what happened was after they were arrested, first of all, let's go over what happened. So the five of them were in that group of wilding youths.
Yes.
And sometime around 9 o'clock at night, after assaulting several of the other victims, they came across Trisha Miley. Let's just call it Miley. She has a weird last name.
Okay.
Who was a 28-year-old investment banker. And they spotted her, charged at her, grabbed her, beat her unconscious, and gang raped her in the bushes and left her for dead. And then they ran off laughing, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But at least that's the official story, right? And so they were arrested for doing that. And of course, all the black people started chimping out. There's Al Sharpton when he was a gigantic ham planet.
Jesus.
And that's him.
Dude, and some people should stay fat though. I think he looks better then.
Yeah, he does. He kind of has like that 1970s pimp look instead of like the AIDS pimp look that he's got now. They raised a stink. They made it racial.
Mm-hmm.
Instantly, they made it racial. They said that you wouldn't have done this if it wasn't a white girl, and you're only arresting them because they're black, this sort of a thing, as per always. I thought I had like a picture of them getting arrested, but it's not in here for some reason. That's okay. So anyway, they arrested the first night. They arrested Raymond Santana and Kevin Richardson, who were arrested with the group of nigs that got arrested in the first wave. And then after interrogating them and the other people they'd picked up, they then went and picked up Antron, Youssef, and Corey Weiss.
Mm-hmm.
And interrogated them. The official story, of course, is they were interrogated for hours without their parents present, and that the cops tricked them using Jedi mind tricks into making the false confessions.
Should I wait to talk about why this is bullshit, or do you want me to talk about it now?
Well, let's wait till we see the outcome here. So they all confess to participating in the rape. And again, because they were held away from their families without the supervision of their parents, no lawyers and all this other stuff. And they were tricked by the evil cops into saying that they almost murdered a girl and raped her, I'm sure that you could understand. I'm sure when you were a kid, that's something you could get a cop to get you to admit to after a couple of hours in a room, right?
Oh, I know. I you watched a lot of documentaries and stuff from the other side, and so did I. And one of the things that I kept hearing was, they were just kids, like going out for a walk, just raising a little trouble, like doing what kids do. I'm like, no white person has ever done this.
Yeah.
Like gone out in a roving gang with like a lead pipe and stuff to go attack people of a certain racial. No, this is not what kids do.
Yeah. When I was 14, I was playing video games and riding my bike, and playing street hockey,
Yeah.
That was it. At no point were my friends like, hey, let's get like 30 of us. We'll go downtown and just start beating niggas with a lead pipe. That'll
Brilliant.
Be fun.
Yeah. Oh.
So, yeah. So they get convicted despite the black people in a rage. And interestingly enough, the jury is very mixed. In fact, I think it's like half black. There's a guy on the jury who's a member of the NAACP, and yet they still get convicted. They're sentenced to there's two trials really. There's the first trial that has the two trials were
McCray, Richardson, and Salam, and Santana. So the only one that was tried as an adult is Corey Weiss.
Okay, there you go. And then they were sentenced to various sentences ranging from 5 to 15 years, I think, with Corey getting the 15-year sentence, right?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, here they are. That's one of the arrest pictures I was looking for. That's
14 years old.
That's Antron, I think.
The child.
All right. So then there's a big, uproar in 2002 when Mateus Reyes comes out and says, actually, he's the one that raped the woman that was raped in the park. And in fact, one of the pieces of forensic evidence they could never connect to the five was a semen sample that when they did the genetic testing did not match any of the five.
Yes, and it was in her sock, and I think her shoes had flown off in the attack. I don't think it was on her body.
Right. It was in a sock, and they connected it to Mateus Reyes after he confessed to doing it. He said he was the only one there. He was already in jail for a number of rapes. In fact, he raped his mother.
He did. So, he also murdered a pregnant woman in front of her other children.
Yeah, so
this guy was a real bastard. He ended up being the East Side rapist, what they were calling the East Side rapist. So
another one of these based Hispanics. And so he says, well, I'm the one that did it. And this is when, of course, because of his confession, because of the DNA evidence, you had a lawsuit in 2003 filed. And in 2003, they sued the city of New York for malicious prosecution, racial discrimination, emotional distress.
Oh.
And the litigation, because by this time, all but one of them were already, they'd already served their sentences. Corey got out during this litigation. Mm-hmm. But when the litigation, because he got out after 13 years. But during this process, they'd already served their sentences. So this was more, it was a shakedown. They were trying to get money. The mayor's office was basically tying them up in endless litigation and wasn't going to pay up until Ken Burns stepped up to the plate. Good old Ken Burns. If those of you who've seen the PatCon series that I did, you'll know that a lot of that was inspired by another work of Ken Burns. Ken Burns, who's a master leftist propagandist, who's not Jewish himself, but was married to two different Jews, and his daughter is Jewish, and she also worked on the documentary, but she was also working for the lawyers in this case that were trying to extort. Initially, they were suing for $100 million, trying to get $100 million. And after the release of this Ken Burns documentary in 2012, which had an obviously one-sided view of the events and made it seem as if these five little boys were just out having a good time and they got caught up in something that they had no plan in participating in. They just happened to be around and they got railroaded because of racism. And they were falsely attacked by the racist DA's office and imprisoned by the racist, New York City, everyone knows, it's basically like the South in the 1950s, which they literally say. Ken Burns' daughter in her book literally compares New York in the 1980s to the same racial consciousness of the South in the 1950s, which is
that's
absurd.
So asinine. It was such a multiracial city, right? And everybody was at the behest of these black whims, their criminal whims. Ken Burns actually was clever in the way that he made this documentary. There's no commentary. It's just the accounts of the people involved. And so it creates this narrative that they were tried unfairly, and it plays on all the usual emotions without really him having to say a word. This is one of those documentaries that if you fell for it, I don't know, man. Like, you got to be pretty dumb to fall for this one, I think.
But a lot of people think, luckily for Ken Burns and these guys are really fucking dumb. And so a lot of people were swayed by this documentary. And due to pressure from the this documentary, which served as a propaganda piece to poison the well, New York did settle in 2014 for $41 million.
Oh, my God.
$41 million.
Good Lord.
So they got $41 million. And then the icing on the cake was in 2019, a Black Studies major by the name of Ava DuVernay, I guess we're working with Netflix, another organization that likes to shit on white people whenever possible. She put together a mini series called When They See Us. When They See Us. And as she explained, the they, of course, in that is white people. And the us in that is black people. And so when white people finally see us, when they finally see us, when they see us as scum, they see us as evil. And it's a four-part miniseries where they completely fictionalize the entire event. They portray the black boys as, you know, again, in the same way, actually even more so than in the Ken Burns documentary, because it's entirely fictional. And she'll even say, which we'll play in a second, that it was, that she purposely made it, you know, biased and slanted. But it won an Emmy. And then this is when they started being known as the Exonerated Five. So this is the Emmy award show where the whole crowd stands up and gives a standing ovation to the five nig rapists.
But most importantly, this is for the men that we know as the Exonerated Five. It's for Raymond, Yusuf, Anton, Kevin, and King Corey Wise. Thank you so much. It's an honor. It's a blessing.
Black power. Black power. And this is the filmmaker admitting that, yeah, she made it up because she wanted to be biased and slanted in her storytelling.
When it comes to these stories and us being storytellers and we're vessels that are telling these truths, do you ever find it difficult to remove your personal opinion or your personal feelings? Or do you ever feel like there were moments where you felt like you were almost too close and had to take a step back in order to give the story the justification that it needed to be told unbiased?
Oh, this is not unbiased. This is completely slanted to what I believe was never told and never said and never seen. Even 13th, mm-hmm. You know, I try to show as much as I could to give context, but I wasn't necessarily interested in balance.
Oh my God. Oh, we should mention this is from Devin Teresi's documentary on this, which was pretty good. At least what he covers about the case.
Yeah, until he brings up the Holocaust.
He does. He does it twice, and he starts talking about how Steven Spielberg did a great job in Schindler's List,
yeah,
accurately portraying the Holocaust. I was like, oh, this is so good. And then Devin Tracy starts. I'm like, what are you? Yeah. You were so close. Like, what are you doing? Shut up, dude.
Big disappointment. Yeah. But yeah. So she's obviously saying that she doesn't care about the truth. And that is, unfortunately, most people will not go through the trouble of actually looking at the confessions.
Yep.
They'll just accept the fact, or at least the fact as they're told that are facts, that these people were railroaded. They were interrogated for hours on end without their parents present, and they were, they had food withheld from them. They didn't have any water, and they would say anything to get out of this dark, smoky room with these racist white cops that were like punching them in the face when the cameras were off. Unfortunately for them, we have these confessions, and I was able to. Now the audio is really, 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 really bad on these, But I was able, through using audio filters and AI, to clean them up pretty good, pretty decently. And so I wanted, even though it's going to take a little bit of time, I think it's important that we sit through and listen to, in their own words, what they had to say about this. And if it looks coerced to you, and if it seems like they are under these conditions where the coercion would likely happen as they, it's presented in the movie, as it's presented in Ken Burns' documentary, as it's presented it to anyone you ask about the Exonerated Five will say, oh yeah. In fact, if you try to find these confessions, some of them are still on YouTube. They're listed as false confessions.
False confessions, right.
Right. As in fact, they're being used now as textbook false, as examples of textbook false confessions that are a product of police manipulation.
In law schools.
Right. So that is how much they have changed the culture. And I don't know, you guys take a look and you tell me. First of all, let's get out of the way. This is in the very beginning, and this is true of all of these interviews. She makes sure that they have been read their rights, that they understand their rights, but also their parents are present, believe it or not. So let's have a little look here. And again, the audio isn't fantastic, but I don't think it's as terrible as it. I mean, it's certainly the best version you're going to find right now.
Before I ask you about what happened, let me just ask, sir, could you please give your names? And what is your relation to this yet-again player called? Your father, Adam, great. Also present in the room right now are Detective Wild and Detective Shia from the FBI's department. Before I go any further, I want to warn you of your rights with respect to statements that you may make.
So his dad's there. Just so you know, because you're going to hear him say some wild shit, just know his dad is sitting in the chair right next to him as he says this wild shit that he was doing, okay?
Yes.
And ask yourself, is this the kind of thing that if you were manipulated by a cop, like previously, that your dad's right there?
You have the right to remain silent and to refuse to answer any questions. Do you understand? Okay, could you answer our letter, please? You're actually talking to me. Well, anything that you say can be used against you in court. Do you understand?
Yeah.
The right to consult a lawyer now before any questioning and have a lawyer present during any question. Do you understand?
Yeah.
Okay. If you have no lawyer or cannot afford a lawyer will be provided for you now free of charge before any questioning. Do you understand? Now that I've advised you of your rights, are you willing to tell me the truth about what happened in Central Park on the night of April 19th of 1989?
Okay. So he's obviously been read his rights. He knows exactly what, he says he understands his rights, and now he's, being asked to tell him, all right, well, what happened? What exactly did you do there?
Yep.
Have you had something to eat this evening?
Yes.
You feeling all right?
Yes.
Okay. Why don't you tell me what happened on the night of April 19th?
So he's been fed. He feels okay. Again, his dad's sitting right next to him.
Well, it was the event of us and my sister to rob bicyclists and joggers.
Now, if you don't understand Nick speak, if you don't understand Nick speak, he says our plan was to go rob people and attack people in the park and steal bicycles.
Yeah.
I mean, can you be more of a stereotype? We're going to steal bicycles.
I know, right?
So, all right. So he already, right out the gate, first thing he says, our plan was to rob and attack people.
Before you went into the park that night, did you have any crack to smoke?
No, I'm sorry. I didn't take drugs.
Okay. So you didn't do any drugs?
No, I don't do drugs.
Did you drink?
Oh, I don't drink.
So you were pretty clear-headed when you went to the park that night?
Yeah.
And they all say this. So you can't blame that he was under the influence of some kind of drug or some kind of, he wasn't drunk or like that. He was clear-headed.
Okay, what happened when you got to the gate?
There was his man there. And, everybody's going to beat up the man. but somebody just yelled out, you know, if they knew, somebody might be missing.
Okay, well, what did this man look like?
He's saying, so that the first man they encountered, they didn't mess with him because he was a black guy, basically. Because somebody
knew him.
I didn't
understand a word that guy just said.
Yeah, the first man they encountered, they don't attack him because someone knew him, and so they didn't attack him. And then he says it's because he was a black guy. So now we move on to who they did attack.
What were the others doing while Kevin was struggling with her with the wrists?
Okay, so this is the rape. So one thing I clipped out because these are so long, and we're going to watch all four of them confess to the rape. But all four of them also confess to the previous attacks that we talked about, where they attacked the people on the tandem bike. They attacked the people, the former Marine.
Yeah.
And some other guy. They say they threw him on a fence. And then they attacked a homeless guy and stole his food and stuff. So they're copping to all the other attacks, but we're going to focus just on the rape because that's the big one that's in question here. So this is the rape has begun.
What were the others doing while Kevin was struggling with her with the wrists?
Anton was going for our clothes. No person's pulling our arms.
What was Anton doing to her clothes?
Trying to pull them off.
What was she wearing? Were you getting closer?
Yeah.
You walked toward them?
Yeah.
What did you see Anton doing to her?
She's pulling them off. And Kevin was pulling down his pants. Lopez is smacking Lee in the face.
Was she screaming?
She was just hollering like, help, help.
And you said that Kevin knocked her to the ground? He tripped her?
Yeah.
What happened to her when she was on the ground?
Lopez came. He was holding her by arms. He pinched her arms with his knees. And then he covered her mouth with his hand. And then he seems to scream, so he starts smacking her.
What did he smack her with?
His hair.
Where did he smack her?
In the face. Smashing in the face.
Where was he in relation to her body? She was lying on the ground.
With this.
And he was behind her head?
Yeah.
And he was holding her hands? You said that he was kneeling on her arm?
Yeah.
And what was he doing with his hands?
He was covering her mouth. So every time she was talking, he was smacking. He said, shut up, bitch. And kept smacking.
How many times did he smack?
I think twice. Three times.
And did she keep screaming?
Mm-hmm. And just kept smacking.
Did somebody stuff something in her mouth?
No. She picked up the brick and hit her with the brick twice.
Where did he hit her with the brick?
Around her face, right around here or somewhere up here.
After he hit her in the head with the brick, did she stop screaming?
Yeah, because she was like shocked.
When you say she was shocked, what did you see?
She just did this. She didn't do nothing.
Did she stop moving?
Mm-hmm. She just did it.
Well, you say she just stood there. Was she lying down or standing up?
Lying.
After he hit her in the head with the brick, did you see if her eyes were open?
No, I see. I see.
What was Kevin doing while Steve Lopez was holding her hands and hitting her with the brick?
He was having sex with her.
What did you see him doing? Was he on top of her?
Mm-hmm.
He'd answer out loud and say yes or no.
Yes.
And did you see whether his pants were on?
No.
Did he take them all the way off and just take them down or just open his floor? How far down did he throw them?
About a little past the knees.
And did he say anything while he was on top of her?
No, it was all sexual.
He's saying, no, he was having sex with her. I saw you like trying to figure out what he was saying there. No, but yeah. So he's describing the rape in detail. He's talking about how they every time she tries to make noise, they hit her. They hit her with a brick until she apparently basically loses consciousness as far as, I can tell. And then, you know, they're repeatedly hitting her about the face and they're taking turns raping her. He tries to minimize his involvement as you'll see here in a moment.
Well, they all do. That's why they say that their accounts were conflicting, but because they're all trying to minimize their own.
Yeah. Well, like if any of you guys have ever watched like these true crime channels on YouTube where they have the interrogations, the same thing happens in every case. It's always the other person was doing. I was just there. And then Billy went crazy and started killing her.
Exactly.
And I was just like, stop, Billy. Don't do that. You know, like they always try. This is what criminals always fucking do when they know that you can't deny that you were there, so you have to try to make it seem like whatever you were doing wasn't that bad. So I'll continue here. Sorry, this is the worst out of all the audio, this one right here.
What did he do? Did he get on top of her?
Yeah, he was.
And at the point that he got on top of her, did she have any clothes on?
No.
Where were her legs?
Wrapped around.
Wrapped around him?
Like, you know, behind.
Behind him? Her legs open and apart?
Yeah.
Was anybody holding her feet?
No. I didn't know Antoine was behind Kevin.
Could you see what he was doing? Where were you standing?
I was on the side, Kev.
Were you watching?
No, I was behind one of the ATVs.
He literally just, for those who don't couldn't hear that, he was saying he was there playing with her titties.
Yeah, in a false confession, why would you add that much specific and lewd detail?
And that's
it
not...
It would just never happen.
And spoiler alert, that's not the only time he mentions this. He seems to think that that's going to get him out of trouble. The arresting officer said that he saw, this is Raymond Santana, saw Raymond Santana essentially as one of the ringleaders ordering others around during the assaults that he witnessed. So not the rape necessarily, but during the other assaults. So it's hard to believe that his only involvement would be, as he said, playing with her titties. But that he seems to think that this is going to get him out of trouble. And again, we'll go to a statement he made in the police car after being arrested that wasn't allowed in court because he hadn't had his Miranda rights read to him yet, but it is in the police report.
Were you standing up or kneeling or sitting down beside you? Was you leaning over?
I was on my knees. There.
Who has her shirt on? Did you know where her shirt was? Do you know where her bra was? So while Kevin was on top of her, was he laying on top of her?
Mm-hmm.
And while he was doing that, you were peeling her breasts with both hands? How long did you do that?
Only 5 minutes.
5 minutes. Again, this guy, it's hard because it's like really bad audio. AI is trying to clean it up, but the guy talks like a retarded nig.
Hmm? I'm sorry. Only minute is it.
And you did that while Kevin was having intercourse with her. Did Kevin say anything while he was on top of her? You have to answer out loud.
No.
Was Anton saying anything?
No.
Did Steve Lopez say anything?
No, he was saying to shut up, dude. And he smacked him.
So they're
why
obvious...
Why would he say that either?
I mean, right.
This has none of the hallmarks of a false confession. I've watched so many of them, and it's always... leading questions, short answers, they don't elaborate on anything, and they lack specificity almost every single time.
Yeah, they don't add any detail, and his dad is sitting right next to him. And that's also probably why he's mumbling and rocking back and forth in his chair and looking nervous, because he's basically admitting to raping a girl with his dad sitting next to him.
Mm-hmm. Earlier tonight when you spoke to my Detective Sheehan and Detective Arroyo. Your brother was present?
Oh, yes.
So even when he was talking to the police before the interrogation that was on videotape, his father was there at the interrogation and during that discussion. So this whole idea that like the cops poisoned his brain and put all these ideas in his head doesn't add up, because the first thing the cops did after they arrested them and brought him downtown is they called the parents. All the parents showed up. In fact, the only reason why we don't have a recording of Youssef is his mom from Barbados, the criminal country of Barbados, already knew, you know, don't talk to the cops. And so she said they weren't going to talk to the cops. So that's the only reason why we don't have any video of him.
When this woman was first grabbed, you said you first saw her. Kevin Richardson was holding her wrists. Was he saying anything to her?
He was just trying to put... I haven't seen that. I just seen him struggling.
When she got knocked down, and you said that Steve Lopez hit her in the head with the brick, was she bleeding?
I think so, yeah.
Was she bleeding a lot?
No.
No?
And they also try to minimize the blood, because, you know, she was bleeding a whole lot. We'll get to specifically another comment made by one of them when they went to the crime scene that is pretty incriminating. But you got to remember, it's not just in Central Park. It's at night where there's no lights. They've pulled her away from the path. They've pulled her into a ravine, so it's like almost pitch black. I mean, obviously you have the city light, ambient light from buildings far away, so it's almost like a full moon, I guess you could say, that like that kind of lighting, but it's all very dark.
Who else had sex with her besides Kevin Richardson?
I see him. It was my sister, just him.
Did you see him? You said that he had sex with her. He got on top of her, and his pants were damp, and her legs were spread at that time. And did he penetrate her? Did he put his penis inside of her? Did he say that he had?
See?
Did he say that he had?
No, you see.
But you could tell?
Yeah.
How could you tell?
Because he had sex with her, so she's supposed to do games.
Well, when he was doing that, was he moving up and down?
Yeah, up to the scene.
And so you could see that he was moving, thrusting up and down, yeah. Thrusting into her?
That's how I know he was having sex with her.
And when he was on top of her, how were you able to put your hands on her breast?
He wasn't fully on top, but he had his arms up like this.
Could you see where he was inside of her?
Yes.
And when he withdrew from her, could you see his penis? And
look at his penis.
Well, did he have an erection? Well.
So this is another detail. I mean, again, sorry that you're having to listen to this fucking retard here. But another detail is they say, oh, well, DNA evidence, right? DNA evidence. The semen sample that they found didn't match any of these boys. Well, when you actually listen to the confessions, the boys themselves, even the ones that admit to being on top of her and raping her, not just fondling her breast, they all say they couldn't get an erection and they didn't come.
Yeah. And so, the other thing that I wanted to mention, so people that have really low IQs have poor spatial reasoning, and he was able to just immediately say, like, in what position he was in what position the other guy was, without even thinking. He just kind of knew. For somebody with a low IQ, they would really have to think about, like, the spatial orientation of the body and where they were standing and things like that. It just came to him. So, like, this is obviously not a false confession.
Yeah, and again, his dad is sitting right fucking next to him this whole time. They're not feeding him details.
Well, when he was inside of her, you could tell that he had actually penetrated her and that he was inside of her.
Yeah.
Did he ever touch her breasts?
Oh, I think so, yes.
You think so, yes, but you're not sure?
Well, I know he was doing something to her.
What did you see? He was feeling her up? Did you ever see him have anal intercourse with her? Did you ever see him put his penis anywhere else? Did he put his penis in her mouth?
Mm-hmm.
How long was he inside of her and on top of her?
Like 5 to 10 minutes.
Did you say 5 to 10 minutes?
Yeah, 5 to 10 minutes.
That is a long time.
Right. I feel like that's probably an exaggeration.
There's no way. There's just no way. Yeah.
Right. So then let's see here. I got this clip here.
When you went into the park that night, why did you go into the park?
Because I thought we were going to beat people up and take bicycles and get money.
The reason was to go and beat people, take bikes, get money. Or I'll play it again.
That night, why did you go into the park?
Because I thought we were going to beat people up and take bicycles and get money.
Oh, okay.
Beat people, take bikes, and get money.
You went in to beat people up, to take bikes, and
rob people.
And rob people.
Okay, and you were going with your friends for that purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So he admits that was the whole point of going there, was to beat people and rob people. And again, his dad's sitting right next to him. They're not feeding him any details. This here is Antron, the famous Antron. Antron tells a similar story.
This is Detective McCabe and Detective Hildebrand. I think you've already met them. Also present are, I believe, your parents. Could you each please state your full name?
My name is Lee McCrag.
Well, and ma'am, what is your relation to his mother?
So his parents are also there. They also read him his rights, which we'll skip through. And so he's been read his rights. His parents are sitting in the chair, both parents, right next to him when he tells his story. So, again, this idea that they They tricked him into it in this smoky room. Will, you know, punch him in the face like, you know, some kind of gangster movie interrogation is bullshit.
Somebody, when you were at the 20th precinct, gave you something to eat?
Yes.
You, so you've had something to eat?
Yes.
And, yeah, you spoke with the detectives earlier tonight, Sam?
Yes.
Okay, and you gave them a statement?
Yes.
Before you gave them a statement, did they advise you of your Miranda rights?
Yes.
Okay. Why don't you start then and tell...
So he's been read his rights, he understands his rights, as much as a, you know, 60 IQ nig can, I guess. And this is his story.
We was at the tennis court, and then at noon, you seen this lady, jogging lady. She had on blue shorts and a white shirt. She was jogging and he was gonna let her go. And then he just grabbed her.
Okay, where did you first see her?
So to translate, they saw this white lady jogging and they decided to just go grab her.
She's jogging like the thing around the reservoir.
Just jogging on the path around the reservoir. Who was the first person who saw her?
Some kid. Yeah, I don't know his name. It's some kid. He had a black hoodie.
Black hoodie.
Yeah.
And did he? What did he do when he saw her? Did he say anything?
Yeah. We knew that she was a multi-class lady at first when we seen her. And she looked like a man. When we seen her, everybody told you that, so everybody just breathed it. She's a man.
I'm sorry, can you speak up a little bit louder?
And he told everybody, so everybody just waited till she came down.
And when you say you waited, where did you wait?
Like behind trees and like on the ground and stuff.
Right next to the path around the reservoir?
Yes.
So to translate, sorry guys, this one's, they get better, I promise.
It's not your fault.
He says that when the kid in the black hoodie saw her, he said, let's hide. And they hid and laid in wait for her to get to where they were so they could attack her.
And everybody sort of hid?
Yeah.
And what happened as she came closer?
And that's when you charged her.
Okay. Did you charge her?
Mm-hmm.
That's when we charged her. Did you charge her? Uh-huh. Again, his parents sitting right next to him.
What happened when you charged her?
You charged her. And then you got her on the ground. Everybody started hitting her stuff. And she was on the ground. Everybody stopped and everything. And she then we got her easily. Like, I grabbed one arm. I can grab one arm. And we grabbed her legs and stuff.
So to translate... We saw her, we charged her, we started hitting her, she fell on the ground, we started kicking and stomping her. I grabbed one of her legs, another kid grabbed another one of her legs.
Okay, let me back up a second. You charged her. Who was the first person to get back to her? Who knocked her down?
The kid never on her shoulder. And he was like the iron and he was his trust.
And did you hit her?
Yes, hit me.
Okay, where did you get that?
I don't know how to speak that. I just there's like old bunches or something.
And who else kicked her?
So to translate, I'm just looking at Rebecca's face, knowing that. The translate.
What the fuck language is this?
I'm fluent in Nig speak.
Oh, okay.
So
I just see his like teeth and the color of his shirt. I can't read his lips. I don't know what the hell he's
yeah.
doing.
Yeah. Well, the video on his is really, he had the worst quality one out of all of it, like in terms of the video quality. And he just mumbles the entire time. I think partially because, again, he's in trouble and his parents mm-hmm. are sitting right next to him.
Yeah.
And he said that basically he did hit her and he did kick her, and that the kid with the hoodie, the initial guy, who seems like he's trying to put a lot of blame on this mystery kid with a hoodie, is like the instigator.
And that tall, thin black guy was asking that. Did you see him hit her in the ribs? Huh? Did you see somebody hit her in the ribs?
I heard it. I heard it.
You heard it. What did you hear?
It sounded like you hit in your chest. It sounded like that.
Okay.
See, that's a weird detail, too. To translate, she said, "Did you see anyone hit her in the ribs?" And he's like, "Oh, I heard it. I heard it."
Right.
And she's like, "What do you mean you heard it?" "Well, it sounded like someone like someone hitting me in the chest."
Oh, okay.
So like that's a weird. If you're just being directed to make something up, his excited response, "Oh, I heard it." Like he's remembering that sound of them hitting her in the ribs.
Was she screaming? Is that how you could tell that she had been hit?
She wasn't screaming. She is hurt though, so she's screaming.
All right. She wasn't screaming. She was just hurt though. She wasn't screaming.
She was hurt.
Well, the first guy didn't say she was screaming.
He's talking about that she was already knocked out, is what he's talking about, by the time she's hitting the ribs. So right. she gets laid out pretty quick.
Okay. Who took her clothes off?
One of us. Right? No, not one of us. We grabbed her arms and stuff.
Okay. Were you grabbing her arms?
Yeah, I had her left arm.
And where were you holding that? Over her head or to the side? Or?
I had her right between the piece.
Okay. And you were holding it. Was she trying to pull her hand away?
Mm-hmm.
And was somebody holding her other hand? Who was that?
Okay, Puerto Rican came with a black hoodie.
Was somebody holding her feet? Who was holding her feet?
Lana was holding her feet.
Did somebody take her clothes off of her?
Yes.
Okay. What was she wearing?
I think a white t-shirt, something like that.
Who took off her shirt?
She tore black hair.
Who took off her pants?
I think it's him.
So he's trying to blame this mystery tall black kid. And the kid in the hoodie is the ringleaders, and he's saying that they all took off her clothes,
right. You know,
trying to minimize any kind of direct action that he's doing. But again, he's not denying being there. The basic description of what went down is matching the other descriptions, even though he's trying to insert this mystery. Because remember, these kids are friends. They try to make it sound like they're not friends, like they don't know each other. They were just like all caught up in something that, you know, they weren't, you know, they were just all innocent bystanders, but they all knew each other. They all lived in the same neighborhood. And so like, he's trying to minimize the fallout.
He's on the wall right there. Right now.
Did somebody have sex with him?
Yeah.
Did a lot of people have sex with him?
Yeah.
Okay. Who was the first person who got on top of him?
12 black hair.
The tall black kid, mystery tall black kid.
And did he take his pants off when he did that, or did he just open his fly, or what did he do?
I guess he didn't take his pants.
He didn't take his pants. By this point, though, she wasn't dressed anymore, right? Her pants were off?
She was in cross.
Did she ever accuse someone?
I don't know. I was like,
did she still have her shirt off?
No. Like, yeah, nah.
Did she have a bra?
Come on, Nick Brain.
You remember? Did you touch her breast? Okay. You were holding down her arm, and you said the first person who got on top of her was this thin black guy. Did somebody else get on top of her then?
Mm-hmm.
Who was that?
Then the thin black guy, he grabbed one of her arms.
Mm-hmm.
This other kid that was up on her.
And who was that?
His boy down here.
Now then the hoodie. You know, the first is the mystery tall black guy, then the hoodie black guy does.
It's the one with the black hoodie.
Yes.
Clarence Thomas get on top of you?
Yes, at that.
After you did? Okay, so first it was the black guy, then it was the Puerto Rican guy with the black hood, then you got on top of her. Did you have your pants down when you did that?
No.
Did you have your fly uncle?
Yeah, but my penis was in her.
So he's saying his penis was not in her. He got on her after the mystery black guy and the mystery hoodie guy. He gets on her, but doesn't actually insert his penis.
Yeah. Oh my God, this is again, such a hard watch.
I know. It's a weird detail again. Like, why would you even admit to doing that? Obviously you could just say you were there or something like that, but he's saying, no, and he's not the only one to say this, by the way.
What happened?
I just like, our parents wasn't, and I didn't put nothing to her.
So he's saying, I didn't actually put it in her. I didn't actually rape her. I was just, you know, simulating sex basically.
Well, when you got on top of her, you got on top of her so that you could have sex with her, right?
Not really. I just like, I'm just doing it so everybody knows. That's just true.
So everybody
knows what?
So basically, he knows that he's part of the crew, that he's, you know, one
right.
of them.
In I fact, heard that that's from another one of them.
Right.
Too.
And they all say that. They all say, well, I didn't really want to rape her. I just did it so that I would look, you know, like I was part of the group.
I wasn't like going to go.
You said you were just doing it so that everybody what?
Everybody just like just knew I did it.
So everyone would know I did it. So that's his excuse for raping her, and he didn't really rape her. He just pretended to rape her so that everyone would think that he raped her.
Well, how long did you, when you got on top of her, you had your penis out of your pants?
Yeah.
And it was between her legs?
No.
It was against her?
Yeah.
And did you rub against her?
Yeah.
Did you have an erection?
No.
How long did you do that for?
I don't know. A couple minutes.
What were the other people saying while you did that?
Well, they said nothing.
Yeah, while the other people were doing it, nobody said anything?
So he's obviously, you know, again, he's saying that he, again, this is, explains why there's no semen evidence from, just like the other ones. He's saying he didn't even have an erection. He was just simulating the sex to be part of the rape, I guess, to, you know, get participation points in the rape. Now we get to Corey Weiss. This is the one that was featured in the movie. And they make him seem like he's like this innocent little kid that's easily manipulated by these threatening cops in a dark, smoky room, when really it's this brightly lit classroom environment where they give him a soda. And this is the only instance, actually, as far as I know, the parents are not in the room. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure exactly the circumstances why the parents aren't in the room for this guy. But he's read his rights.
He's 17, so who cares?
Yeah.
You have the right to remain silent and to refuse to answer any questions. Do you understand?
Yes, I do.
Anything that you say can be used against you in court. Do you understand?
Yes, I do.
You have the right to consult a lawyer now before any questioning and have a lawyer present during any questioning. Do you understand? Could you please answer, Lev?
So he's read his rights. They go through the whole thing. He at first gives an account that we're not going to listen to, but he gives an account that is minimizing his involvement to the point where he's literally saying he's not even really there. He's hiding behind a tree, scared, watching the other boys rape her. And they conclude the interrogation. He leaves, and then he asks to talk back to the investigators. The cops haul him in again, and he gives a completely different story when he's brought back in.
He came down from the park, from the field, from the reservoir to the field. That's when we came towards the rape.
Who was we?
Huh?
Who was we?
It was me, Steve, and Kevin, all of the rest of the others, and Raymond.
Was Yusuf there?
Yusuf, yes. We, Raymond ran back of her, and she looked back at Raymond, and she started running a little fast. Steve came out towards the front and grabbed her from the front. Then from the front, like, from the beginning right there, that's when it started a little rape.
Just a little rape.
That's like, our little rape is what he said, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So this guy is obviously IQ 60, or if that, maybe IQ 50. And he's got a lot of details. They're not feeding him any details. He seems to have a lot of, you know, specifics now this time around.
Even if they had fed him details previously, do you think that he would be able to retain them to such a level that he'd be able to repeat them? Like, I'm just not convinced. He seems
right.
Too dumb. This guy is like non-functioning IQ.
Yeah, this guy's barely alive.
Then they brought me all the way down.
Okay, when you say Steve grabbed her from the front and Raymond grabbed her from the back,
yeah.
Where were you?
Huh?
Where were you?
Me and Kevin Yusuf was right there looking at them set it all, looking at them start everything by themselves.
You just said something about there was a little rape there.
Yeah.
Tell me what you mean.
Little rape was saying Steve attacked her first with the rape, right there.
Right there?
The first picture you showed me. The first picture you showed me where the white part was at. That's where it started from.
Now, that's a picture they showed him, like, do you recognize this area? It was the area where she was raped.
And it started all the way down.
Okay. When you say a little rape happened there, what exactly do you mean? Tell me what each of the people did.
Steven, he just felt her up. She couldn't take it. She was trying to scream. She slapped her.
She slapped
Steve.
That's been three witness accounts now, right?
Was she dressed?
Oh, yes.
And when you say he felt her up, what exactly did you see him do?
Then that she couldn't take him by herself, and he couldn't take her by herself. Raymond grabbed her to make it hard on her, two against one. It brought too much weight on her, and she had no choice but to let loose. She had no choice but to give up what they wanted. So from there, they brought her body way down there. That's where the blood was at.
How did they get her down to where you found the blood?
They dragged her.
How did they drag her?
They dragged her up from her feet and dragged her down the rest. Her back was on the grass. They just dragged her down the rest. When they dragged her down, that's when Steve stripped her clothes with the knife and everything. Slapped her puss in her face and everything. When they did all that, I didn't want to sit right there and look at what was going on. I didn't want to look like no. If you were with them, you got to show a little effort around them too. So I had to get into it too.
So he says the same thing. I don't want to get involved, but you know, when you're with these guys, you have to show that you're into it too. So I had to show that I was into it too. So this is, again, these aren't details that the cops would have fed them. This is like nigger psychology, basically.
Yeah.
So this is the most honest explanation in terms of like what would have been in their heads when they participated, if there was some little semblance of a still small voice telling them, no, don't do it. This is rape is bad, actually. And he's just like, but my friends, I have to look tough.
Yep.
I wasn't doing what they was doing. They was on top of raping her completely. I was playing with her.
When you say they were raping.
See, again, minimizing.
They all say that. Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't raping her completely. I was just you know,
a little rape.
Yeah, I was just playing around with her a little bit.
Raping her.
Huh?
When you say they were raping her, what exactly were they doing?
This I knew it was fucking her. This was it fucking her. Him, with Steve, and Raymond, and me, and Kev, and Yusuf was playing with her. Like, Yusuf had her arms, and me and Kev was playing with her.
What were you doing when you were playing with her?
Huh?
What were you doing?
I was playing with her legs.
What were you doing to the legs?
Huh? I was going up and down her legs. I wasn't doing as much as they was doing.
See, again, trying to minimize, saying he was feeling
just touching
her legs.
Yeah.
Right. While she's getting raped, you know, and being held down by four other guys, he's just touching her legs. That's all. Not a big deal, right? Not a big deal.
Were you going up to her crotch?
No. I was about to. I said no.
I was gonna touch her crotch, but then I was like, no, that's not good. I have a conscience. I didn't touch her crotch. I was about to, but then I was like, that's where I draw the line. This whole beating her almost to death. And while my friend's raping her, feeling her legs, that's fine. That's within the realm of acceptability. But I wasn't going to touch her crotch.
I couldn't exactly see myself doing that.
And ironically, that's what it is. Like, that's the code of conduct for this guy. Is like everything up to touching her crotch is fine.
Even though I was up to it, but I was going to do it.
Even though he was up to it? So he's trying to explain. It's not because I'm a pussy. I was up to it. I could have done it if I wanted to.
No, I think he was saying like I was almost up to her crotch.
Oh, okay.
With his hand.
Oh, what a burn them all. Burn them all.
I can see the expression on her face that when we do this and get caught by the cops and handcuffs, it's going to be through.
See, and that's
and
the
just
real.
Worried about getting caught. Yeah.
Yeah. See, and that's the real reason why he was thinking about severity of the punishment at this point. He's already worried about getting caught by the cops.
Yeah.
So what they did and what I did was different from them. The only people that did it different was me, Yusuf, and Kevin did what they were doing. Me and Yusuf was just playing with him.
Did you play with her friend?
So Yusuf is his friend. That he, like his
they
neighborhood
got picked
friend.
Up together, yeah.
Right, and so that's why he's also trying to minimize what Yusef's involvement was, saying that, oh, yeah, they were doing it, but, you know, me and Yusef, we were the only ones doing it different.
Breast?
Huh? You used to play with the breast.
Did you?
No. I didn't go up to the breast or nothing. I stayed on the leg. They told me to pull out her pants, and pulled out her pants. So Steve got off of her. Steve said I was a chump. Steve called me a punk because I didn't do it. They hold it down.
See, that's another detail, right? Steve called me a punk for not pulling down her pants. It's like, I don't know if that really happened, but it's a weird, that's not a detail you were fed, you know?
Yeah.
Steve ripped her pants with his knife. That's what made her mad. And that's when she started scratching him. What's her name? Kevin. She was yelling pretty loud. Used to close her mouth. They had bigger heads than us. Closed her mouth. So we were looking at her, and I felt kind of bad. This is my first extreme I did to any type of female in the street. This is my first rape.
Oh, it's his first rape.
Look at that. I'm a good man.
This is my first rape.
First rape, yeah.
Don't I get like a gimme on this one, you know? It's my first
one,
rape, right? I've never done anything like this to a woman on the streets.
Listen, I never did this before in the schoolroom, my last time doing it. This is my first experience. This will be my last. So when they did that, they just went on what they were doing. And after which Kevin and Raymond picked up a rock. I think, I'm not even gonna say a thing. Kevin hit her in the face with the rock. That's what knocked her out. Definitely knocked her out. She thought it was a punch, but it was a rock that hit her. Steve was using the knife to cut her legs. I don't know how he was doing it. He was using it to cut her legs. Half of them were using their nails to cut her legs. And me and Yusuf, they were kept since Kev and Steve and Raymond was acting wild. Me and Yusuf stayed to the side. Even though we were playing with her, we stayed to the side. They were acting too wild. They were swinging on her and everything.
What does that mean?
What?
They were swinging on her.
They were punching her face, punching her face, punching, boom, boom, boom. I couldn't stand looking at them punching her face through.
They were doing it with both hands?
Yeah. It was like more than two hands punching her face.
Who was punching her?
Huh?
Who was punching her?
Kev, Raymond, and Steve. I'm still not saying that me and Yusuf were playing innocent even though we were playing with her. But me and Yusuf wasn't going that far but doing that. The only way me and Yusuf were going that far, that's his guys, that's his man. And we'll try to defeat all of us.
I didn't understand what you just said.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Dude, it's like, come on.
I said, all right, since me and Yusuf didn't go as wild as them three did.
Yusuf and I didn't go as wild as those three did.
I mean, Yusuf was all about, if, say for instance, if we would rob, we would grab the running man. Being that he was a man, we knew he was going to stay up for his rights and fight back.
So he's trying to justify, he's trying to say they're not the ones that instigated, him and Yusuf weren't the ones that instigated the rape because they didn't see it as sporting. And that when they attacked men, that it was more sporting and that the woman had no way of fighting back. And then he got caught up basically in raping her.
That's when we knew we had to fight him. But since this was a female, she couldn't even take one of us. She couldn't even take a hit. Steve hit her, one time, boom. She closed her eyes for quite a while. That's when he ripped her pants, she opened, and she just opened her eyes. She's got into it. Her ego and her body took over. She started going wild.
What did she do?
Huh?
What did she do?
She was kicking. And she almost kicked me. That's why I moved out her leg. I let her leg go. I was holding her leg, I let her leg go.
See, a lot more details too, you know? Like,
yeah, she lets him go for a lot longer in this interview. She's not asking a lot of follow-up questions. I think this is the one that is the most obviously not a false confession.
Right. And
I don't know why they highlighted it the most. I mean, this one is...
Well, because they have the recording of the first one, which is different, where it's not different in that he still says that the same people were raping her and stuff. And he just makes it sound like he was hiding behind a tree and not participating at all. And he couldn't really see all the people involved. And he's really wishy-washy about it. And this time he's in earnest, like going at it. Now, I think part of this is, I mean, I don't want to say to his credit, but part of it was in the first interview, they showed him a picture of what she looked like at the hospital. And he looked genuinely shocked. And he was just like, oh, I didn't know she was bleeding that bad. I know she was that fucked up. And I think that image might have sat with him while he was in the waiting room, and that's why he decided to go back in and tell him what happened. But I don't know. That's just me trying to give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt.
She kicked Kevin in his chest. Kevin wild on her and punched in her face. Having him punch in her stomach. Having him punch in her leg. He said, we gotta let her go because your rule... So, man, you should tell her, Steve, let her go, man. Because you might want a dead body on her hands and strength.
See, and he's telling him to stop, not because it's a cruel thing to do, but they don't want a dead body on their hands.
Yeah.
Leave it alone. Please let her live. Yeah, nah, man. She wants Scott's cat, man. She wants, so what, man? What you going to do, gonna kill her? See, I'm gonna do something to kill her. Come on, man. But now we got cops out here looking for us. Come on. They've got half our people.
So he's worried about getting caught at this point. That's why that they decide to stop raping her. Not because of anything else.
When they got off of her, because it's like when they start cutting, when they start hitting with the bricks, I see blood scattered. I moved out the way. We just left. We didn't leave. We was like,
we left. Well, we didn't really leave. See, that's the thing. If you're lying, he could have just said we left. Then, you know, like it started.
Yeah.
They were hitting her with bricks. And it was getting bloody, and so we left. And he's like, oh, we left. Well, we didn't leave. We just took a few steps back.
Three steps away from them. Dude, beating her up. He's like, oh, man, Yusuf was laughing.
And Yusuf was laughing. His friend, like, he's shocked by the brutality of it, and his friend is laughing.
He got away laughing. And my expression towards that, I felt kind of bad. The reason why I did that, not just to prove myself, just the reason why I was with them. Not because they would call me a name your bother. Just the reason why I did it, because we was all together.
So again, the same justification they're all using. I only did it because I wanted to be part of the friend group, the wolf pack.
Like I said, the reason why I did it, that's just to prove myself. I don't prove myself for nobody. I just did it because we went to the park.
To what?
Huh?
To what?
For trouble. When this is part for trouble, we got trouble. A lot of trouble. That's what they wanted, and I guess that's what I wanted. If I was doing it, that's what I wanted too.
So he's admitting intent. That's what he went to the park for.
Yeah.
He went to the park for trouble, and he got trouble. And If that they were doing it, he wanted to do it too.
But when they did all this, man, this was away from that. He was away from me. We looked at him. I felt bad. He started laughing. He said, but it ain't funny, though. It's not funny. What's going on? But he was laughing. But I felt it bad just looking at it happen. I can imagine raping a woman, but not beating up just like that.
What?
Yeah. I can imagine raping a woman, but not beating her up like that. So, like, again, this gives you a little window into the minds, if you can call them that, of these fucking niggas.
I can imagine anybody raping a woman. If I have to rape a woman, I'm going to rape her. I can't beat her up.
If I need to rape a woman, I'll rape her, but not going to beat her up.
Can't look at it that way. Look at all that blood squirting and all this.
All his blood is just too gross.
Because it grosses me out, not because it's immoral, yeah.
When we took a statement from you before, what you're telling us now is not the same thing as you told us then.
No.
Why didn't you tell us the truth before?
I couldn't face telling the truth. I couldn't face it. I could not face it at all.
What made you change your mind?
I thought about it good, strong. Something told me you can get me with my line.
See? He's admitting that he thought about it. He sounds genuine.
We are about to finish this interview. I want you to know we will not have another interview, even if you send the detective and ask for a third chance to say something. So I'm asking you now the way I did at the end of the last interview. Is there anything, at all that you have told us in the last half hour that you've spoken that is not true?
No more. Well, I said that's what I had to say. So I couldn't play myself innocent through the whole game. Something didn't sound right. It didn't sound right to me. I was playing innocent through the whole thing.
Did anyone make you change your story?
No. I thought about it. I thought about all the lies I said. And all the detectives came in my face, arguing, cursing at me, hitting on me. I thought about it. I said to myself, you know you said a lie. You said about at least 10 or 20 lies. I said, not even the first minute I stepped inside. All I had to do is tell the truth, I probably would have been home. But no, been I told a lie, I got to face up to what I got to live up to. Now.
Have you told us the truth now?
Yes, ma'am.
Did you tell us the truth voluntarily?
Yes, ma'am.
Because you wanted to?
Yes, ma'am.
Did anyone force you?
No, ma'am.
Did anyone threaten you?
No.
Thank you very much. It is now 20 minutes to...
So pretty cut and dry there.
That was painful. It was a painful series, Devin. Good Lord.
Oh, there's one more.
Oh, that's right.
There's this genius right here.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin Richardson. We won't, his is really long. And so we'll just cut to the chase. Obviously his parents are there too. So I'm not going to play it. I'll just show you like the camera pans over and show there's his dad. So his dad's there. They read him the rights, just like they did with the other ones. He admits to the rape too. To participating in the rape too.
A lady jogger came.
Was she running on the road, or was she running on the same path that man jogger had been running on?
She was on the road.
Okay.
Then
what did the lady jogger look like?
She was short. She had short hair. She had gray shorts.
So here's another thing. She was short and had short hair. That's an important detail because she did have short hair, and there was no news reports. There would be no way he would know that she had short hair.
Black biking pants.
Did she have a shirt on?
A white tank top. So if I was chasing her, like if he was running, nobody was around.
Nobody was around, no other people besides the lady jogger.
Yes.
So who started running?
was Angel and Raymond and Steve in front.
And you ran?
Yes. Because like everybody was running. And then, like, they caught her. Like pulled her shirt off. And, like,
who caught her first?
Antron.
And?
Steve and Raymond's on, like, beside them.
When they caught her, what did they do to her? Did they grab her? What did they do?
Like, they pushed her down. Nobody was pushing them down. They grabbed her shirt. And she fell.
She fell?
Yes.
And who was grabbing her shirt?
It's Antron. Everybody was surrounding her. So they started, like, taking her bra off.
Okay, did somebody take her shirt off first?
Yes.
Who took her shirt off?
Raymond took her shirt off.
Was she wearing a bra?
Yes.
And did somebody take her bra off?
Yes.
Did they take it off, or did they pull it up, or what did they do?
They ripped it off.
Was she screaming? What was she saying?
Like, saying, stop. We have to help. So, I said, I was running, saying, like, I shouldn't. I said, don't do that to her. Like, don't do it.
Don't do it. But then he ends up saying he raped her, too.
And I came over there. And I was, like, trying to stop her.
Oh, he's trying
and
to
I,
stop
I
it.
I got in the way. She kind of, like, scratched me a little bit.
And then he scratched her in the face. Blah, surprise, surprise. While he was trying to stop it, he got scratched. So he's so close to her that this little short woman with a very small arm reach, the only way he's getting scratched in the face is if he's the one on top of her.
Yeah.
And they have, when I can't move, she scratched me. That's when Mike hit her. Yeah.
Did you try to grab her?
Not like that. But I was like trying to stop.
Were you trying to feel her breasts?
No.
Were you trying to touch her?
Not really.
Didn't you tell the police earlier today that you had tried to grab her, and that's when you got scratched?
No, not like filling her up.
Okay, not like
stop
that.
Stop it.
But you tried. He's
trying to stop. Okay, I forgot. This guy's the one that was like, I was just trying to stop it. And then he talks about other rape. But anyway, so we won't watch this one. You can watch them on YouTube in their entirety. But they're all, obviously, they're not feeding them details. They're not leading them along. This is, it's obviously, even though the stories don't match all the details entirely, it's because they're trying to minimize their participation in it. They're trying to blame, mystery black guys in hoodies or tall black guys they don't know, or their friend and them are standing a couple feet away, or, I was trying to stop it, and that's why she scratched me in the face, this kind of shit. And so it's obvious that they were involved.
Of course. This is such an outrageous miscarriage of justice. I think there would be more justice if there were just lynchings without due process immediately following this.
Right. No, and that's the thing. And New York would be $41 million richer.
Yeah.
The economic impact alone. But yeah, there should have been lynchings. If there were lynchings, actually, these guys probably would have thought twice about doing something like this. But instead, it's open season on white people. So yeah, no problem at all. Anyway, so there's more than just the confessions. And the thing that people like to hang on to with that when they say, oh, it's the exonerated five, they like to hang on to the DNA evidence as if like that's like somehow disproves the case, when they knew in the beginning of the trial the DNA did not match any of the five attackers.
Right.
And the prosecutors told the jury that we don't know who this other guy is. There's obviously more people that were involved in this. We don't know who this is. So that doesn't mean that these five weren't involved in the rape. It was a gang rape. And so it just means we don't have all of the perpetrators.
Right.
So when
they always knew that.
Yeah, they always knew that the DNA didn't match. They also always knew that, at least according to the attackers, that some of them at least didn't even have an erection. And
yeah.
didn't penetrate and just simulated the sex, and they were all trying to just get in on it to impress their friends. And so that the idea that they would have had left DNA in the first place. I mean, it just, it's kind of a non-issue. So you had that issue, but also, in addition, the first kid, this genius right here, Raymond Santana, who his big excuse was, I was just playing with her titties. I didn't do nothing. So they have the idea of how we know that he's involved. Well, in addition to his on camera next to his father confession, is after he was one of the initial people arrested. So mm-hmm. he was rounded up before they even knew that there was a woman who had been raped who was bleeding out in the forest, the haunted Nig forest. And so they were hauling him in with some other boys. And while they were hauling him in, one of the people that were one of the they don't note in the report who it was, but one of the kids says, I didn't do the murder.
And this was before Trisha had even been found. They know that. And then I think Santana said, I had nothing to do with the rape. All I did was feel her tits.
Yeah.
So this is like all in the car.
Yeah.
Being driven between precincts. And do you know why they were being driven between precincts?
Because it was too full or what?
Because they were adhering to juvenile protocol so stringently. And part of New York law dictates that you can only interview juveniles one at a time in a child-friendly room, of which each precinct only had one. So when they say, when people are saying that they were interrogated for 30 hours, no, they were being interrogated one by one, and they had to wait like 9 hours to be interrogated. And during that time, they were eating, they were sleeping, they were drinking water, they were calling up their parents. Yeah, so all of that is false. None of them were interrogated for 30 hours. They were just really trying to observe juvenile protocols. And so they had to actually go to another precinct so that they could do like two lanes of interviewing the juveniles.
So while they were transporting Raymond Santana to this other precinct so they could interview him with his dad in the child-friendly room, while in the car, he said, I had nothing to do with the rape. All I did was feel her tits.
Yeah.
That was in the police report, and they couldn't use it in court. He was still convicted, even though they couldn't use that in court because he had not been Mirandized at that point.
Yes.
Another issue was Melanie Jackson, who was the older sister of one of Corey Weiss's friends. So the guy in the white and red shirt, this douchebag right here. Once he was in jail, he called up a friend from Rikers. And after the phone call, the friend's sister said, you know, like, that's fucked up. He's a rapist. Why are you talking to him? And the friend said, no. He didn't rape her. He just held her down. So even the friend's understanding of events, this friend that he's calling from Rikers, that he's, you know, that he's good buddies with, was that he wasn't directly, he was just holding her legs, kind of like he says in the interview. And the sister, thinking it would actually help him for some reason, went to the cops and told the cops that's what had transpired. So the cops had a police report, and then when they re-interviewed her, because they did it after Reyes came out and said that he was the lone rapist, they did this evaluation of the case. They went and re-interviewed a bunch of people. They wanted to see what, you know, if there was any validity to this. They re-interviewed her in 2002, and she said the same thing, that, oh yeah, he told my brother that he just he didn't rape her. He just held her down while she was being raped. And there was also another friend of his that said he had bragged about being involved in the rape prior to being arrested, because he was arrested later. He wasn't in the initial group of people that were picked up when they picked up people like Santana. So that there's a lot more evidence than just that. Also, I understand there's some myths that you wanted to bust.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned all of these myths about that they weren't eating. That was a later thing that emerged with the lawsuit. There was no evidence of that. And if that had actually happened, it would have come up in pretrial hearings. Like, there's no way that would have come out, or that wouldn't have come out before the lawsuit. So we know that's bullshit. The interrogation time, as I mentioned, another myth is that, they didn't know each other. I see this a lot. Like, these kids didn't know who, but even at the beginning of the Ken Burns documentary, they're saying like, well, I recognized him from the hood. Like, I knew his face. I didn't know his name. None of these people were complete strangers. They right. just were acquaintances. Right. To say that they didn't know each other is not true.
Right. They knew each other from school and stuff like that.
Right. So. Right. And the greatest myth of all, of course, is that these are false confession. So you directed me to this Armstrong report, this comprehensive, exhaustive report about the quality of the juvenile interrogations, and they found no evidence of police misconduct, coercion, or constitutional violations. They followed rules for questioning minors. The DA's office and trial judge saw no improper tactics. And I think some of these people were black too. Inconsistencies in the defendant's statements were expected. They minimized their roles, but showed general consistency on key facts. The jogger was knocked down on a road, dragged into woods, beaten, sexually assaulted by some while held by others, and left semi-conscious. And that they also found there was no feeding of details by the police. Only Weiss claimed that later it was rejected. And some informal inculpatory statements outside formal interrogations and other witnesses corroborated involvement. So it's obvious that this was some kind of post hoc racial money grab.
Right.
Did you mention that Ken Burns' daughter actually got a cut of this $41 million?
Yes. Yeah. No, she worked for the lawyers that were trying to get the $41 million.
Right. So, and she definitely, like, she directly financially benefited
right.
from this. And then I want to talk a little bit about this myth that there's no evidence. We talked about the face scratch. It's a damn shame they couldn't get DNA out of that. I bet they would be able to do that today.
Yeah.
And something that in the Ken Burns documentary that was not mentioned was the enormous number of witnesses. So in the original case, there are sworn depositions of 95 witnesses. This was a 117-page decision by New York State Supreme Court Justice Thomas Galligan, in sworn testimony given in two trials and affirmed by two appellate courts. So this idea that this is like a racially motivated thing, when really this was a cross section of the diverse demographics of that area of New York, is preposterous. I mean, 95 witnesses. This is a good one. This is the one we just talked about. Yeah. I put this in twice. That the brother, the sister's friend. I don't know why she thought that was going to be exonerating for him.
Yeah. Yeah, he just held her down. Bitch.
Yeah, it's fine. Oh, and then the most important thing is that Santana and Richardson, they separately pointed out the location of the rape when they were brought to Central Park. So I don't know how people are squaring that circle. That right there. Before we get to the DNA evidence, a thing or two about DNA, because this pisses me off in cases. Before 1908, when was the advent of really serious DNA technology? Like early 90s, maybe?
Early 90s, yeah, early 90s.
Before that, every single murder, rape, robbery that there was a conviction on or that was prosecuted did so effectively in the absence of DNA technology. Like, the idea that you need DNA, or really in certain cases that it's exonerating, it can absolutely cloud your judgment if you're ever on a jury. And now I think in true crime podcasts, they call this like the law and order effect, where people think that there always needs to be substantial forensic evidence to support the guilt or innocence of any given perp. But that's just not true. I mean, people always downplay the importance of circumstantial evidence. Circumstantial evidence is, you know, the crux of many a strong case. And there's a lot more than there's forensic evidence on this one. Trisha, when she came out of her coma and thought it was 1953 for a month or whatever, she actually did. She was really fucked up. The doctors who were interviewed by Ken Burns' daughter, and he did an entire day interview, the main doctor on Trisha's case, and she just decided not to use any of it. They're like, ah, it's fine. But the doctors, the team of doctors working on her, they noted in her chart that she had bruises and red hand markings all over her body that were all different shapes and sizes. They were all different shapes and sizes. If that is not evidence. And so when I was talking to Grok about this case, I'm like, well, how do you explain this? And Grok was like, well, the general public says that these might have been hand grabs and things from before this incident.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That's insane. Like, yeah, what are the
chances?
She's
getting manhandled by someone else. And then,
right. It's just incredible. That in and of itself, irrespective of DNA evidence, is evidence that there were multiple perpetrators. And she today has said that she believes that, even though she doesn't remember, she believes that there were multiple perpetrators.
Yeah, so this is that article you sent me. It says, so I wish the case hadn't been settled. 1989 Central Park jogger believes more than one person attacked. And the bottom line is, this is a quote from her. I always knew that there was at least one more person involved because there was unidentified DNA. So she's talking about how they knew that the DNA was not those other people. And the assumption was never like, oh, it's just mystery DNA. They knew there had to be other people and they just didn't catch everyone. And that this other guy that's copping to it now was likely either there at the scene initially, he was part of the mob, or he came in and scooped it up, or, you know, attacked her after they had run off. But so that was never a question. They always thought something like that had happened. Quote, so when I heard the news that there was an additional person found whose DNA matched, that wasn't a tremendous surprise.
Right.
But when he said that he had alone had done it, that is when some turmoil started. Wondering, well, how can that be? Millie and her doctors said that there was medical evidence to support the charge that more than one person was responsible for her attack. Her injuries were different from what Reyes claimed as the sole attacker. Quote, there were handprints pressed into her skin that looked like a red outline, Kurt said. The handprints were of different sizes as well. So she had different sized handprints all over her body, and the injuries that Reyes describes, by the way, his account changes every time he's interviewed about it. He has a totally different telling of the story. His description, none of his descriptions match her injuries for what he said that he did.
Right, right. Oh, before we move to that really quick, also, there were bloodstains and dirt on the clothing of several of the five, and they weren't able to match. Okay, they matched the blood to Trisha through blood typing, which is kind of a primitive analysis and fits a lot of people. They weren't able to do it, or the hair that they found with mitochondrial DNA. So I don't know. That's unusable, but not, you can't dismiss it, right? I mean, it's still like, why are you covered in blood and dirt, guys? Right. Like, what are you doing here? And then there were also statements from a bunch of the other people that were in the pack of 30 that nobody talks about. All of this totally absent from the Kim Burns documentary, not addressed at all.
Right. And in fact, the lead investigator on that case, who is himself black, was interviewed by, well, he's the same guy we showed earlier. who's probably about, it looks like to me, he's like a quadroon. And he was interviewed by Larry Elder, who is black, about, after watching the documentary, and this is what he had to say about it.
Well, you were there that night. Why don't you tell us what happened?
Well, to begin with, I'm listening to Ken Burns, and it's astounding to listen to him fabricate what went on that night. Ken Burns, I could never watch anything that he's produced anymore with any amount of confidence that he's telling the truth, that this is an honest portrayal of what's happened.
Now, Detective, you were there that night. Did you and your partner arrest the people that became the Central Park Five, all five of them?
What happened was we were looking for the group of teenagers who were wilding, who were rioting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's the best way to describe it.
I can't get over that.
They were rioting in the park. We came upon 20 to 30 of them after they had assaulted the teacher, John Lachlan, and beat him so badly that both of his eye sockets were shattered and his skull was cracked. He wasn't even able to identify who it was that beat him because he couldn't see. His head looked like it was dunked in a bucket of blood. Wow. We captured five of the 30 that we observed because the group, of course, started running when we went to apprehend them.
Mm-hmm.
And two of the five were Kevin Richardson and Raymond Santana, part of the Central Park Five.
Mm-hmm.
And just so that you understand, as we observed the group, we watched Raymond Santana with Stephen Lopez leading the group. I could see them turning around and addressing them almost as though they were leading the pack, and as they were walking uptown, up Central Park West.
Mm-hmm.
Once we arrested them, yeah, you have to understand something. We arrested them before the jogger was even found. The jogger was still in the ravine. She was by herself in a ditch by a stream, basically dying.
So, you know, it's... I don't know why you'd ever actually believe a Ken Burns documentary in the first place, but, you know, he's a respected documentarian. But we got a little more of this here.
Detective, as you know, you have been accused of forcing the confessions. You're accused of not giving the boys the opportunity to be with their parents, not giving them food and water, not allowing them to use the restroom. Linda Fairstein has been characterized as a racist. And I want to give you an opportunity to address some of these distortions. Linda Fairstein was the lead prosecutor in the case. And she wrote an op-ed piece about this miniseries called When They See Us, in which she said it was full of lies. She said the miniseries portrays the suspects as being held without food, deprived of their parents' company and advice, not even allowed to use a bathroom. Nonsense. If that were true, that would have been brought up at the hearing where they determined the confessions were voluntary. It says that the film suggests the only evidence that they have against the suspect is their forced confessions. Not true. One woman testified that one of them told her he held her down. Probably thinking that holding her down meant that he was exonerated from crime. She was wrong. There were bloodstains and dirt on some of the other five, Linda Fairstein said. There were statements made by more than a dozen other kids who participated in the park rampage, fingering the five.
So, yeah, it's crazy, but yeah. Now, I got a little more if you want me to. I don't know how much you want me to play this. Let's see.
Oh, I mean, it's go ahead.
I don't know how repetitive it is.
When you watched the documentary that Ken Burns did, your reaction to that documentary was what?
Oh, it's a complete farce. Ken Burns himself said that he made the documentary for one reason, and that was to force the city to pay the lawsuit, pay the Central Park Five money, and that's it. That's why he would not show the city the outtakes from the filming that he did, because he didn't want people to see the contradictions. He didn't want people to see the lies. He didn't want people to see that they were clearly involved in the attack on Patricia Miley,
mm-hmm.
aka the Central Park jogger. All you have to do is watch the videos. Watch the videos in their entirety. There's a website called Central.
The site doesn't work anymore, but he's basically telling them to do exactly what we did, which was
watch them all. Yeah.
Watch the confessions. So God,
this is so outrageous.
Yeah.
Before we close out, we should talk a little bit about the problems with Ray's confession and DNA. If you want to.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So DNA did confirm that Ray's raped Trisha, but the report strongly questions his claim that he acted alone. So there was no corroboration beyond what he said. And wasn't he at Rikers with, why do I always forget his name?
With Corey Weiss.
I always want to call him Casey. Yeah. He was at Rikers. So it's possible that they cut some kind of deal in there, right?
There was some overlap. They did meet each other in prison at one point.
They did, yeah.
I think they even cover that in the Netflix movie, but they make it look like he's like, why didn't you tell him the truth that you were the only rapist? And the Ray's like, okay. And like, I think that's what's in the Netflix movie. I'm not positive.
Yeah, so that's a possible motive. He might have had prison threats or benefits. He was already going away for life, no chance of parole under any circumstances. So what difference does it make?
Right.
He had major inconsistencies in his account of the details. And so what I think, was this from the Armstrong report? Actually, I'm not sure. I got this from, I'm doing Ray's confession in DNA, but now I'm like, did I get this? I think it was from the Armstrong report. The panel suggests a more likely scenario. The five participated in an initial assault consistent with their wielding pattern. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Then Ray's joined or followed, inflicting more brutal injuries. So this aligns with the jury's original view of an unknown additional attacker.
Right.
And then, of course, she had the multiple handprints on her body. So I think that it's obvious. Like when you talk to a layman about their case, it sounds insane that somebody got raped and then later somebody was like, oh, I'm just going to rape this chick too. But that is what happened in this case. And what we don't know, the only thing we really don't know, this is not much of a mystery, this case. We don't know how close she was to dying after the Central Park Five. When they were done with her, how close she was to dying. Like we know that they beat her, but we don't know if they nearly beat her to death.
Well, there's also indication that Race was actually part of the initial attack because Corey Weiss in a interview with police mentioned that a man by the name of, was it Raymond? Not Raymond. I have it somewhere here. Let me look it real quick. But he mentioned to cops, here we are, blah, 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 Rudy was the name. All right, so Reyes claimed the act alone and evidenced the participation of the defendants. They include blah, 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 blah. Okay. Santana and Richardson separately pointed out the location of the rape, blah, blah, blah. All right, here's the Rudy part. When Weiss was questioned, he made reference to a man named Rudy who took the woman's Walkman. The description of the woman's Walkman pouch was similar to Ray's description of a fanny pack at the time of his interview. The police had no way of knowing that the jogger had a Walkman or that she carried it in a pouch. Weiss also commented on the amount of blood at the spot where the rape had occurred. When asked why he was so surprised by the amount of blood, he answered, "I knew she was bleeding, but I didn't know how bad she was. It was really dark. I couldn't see how much blood there was at night." But as far as the fanny pack thing goes, the race when he one of the claims that they say proves that he was the lone attacker is he mentions that when after he raped her, he took her Walkman and her fanny pack that it was inside of, and that that had not been known to police until his confession. Well,
yes.
When they did the Armstrong review of the evidence, they actually found out that Corey Weiss did mention that someone named Rudy had taken the Walkman inside a fanny pack, inside a pouch. And guess what? Race, at the time, was using the name Rudy at one of his jobs that he had.
Yeah.
So there is actual evidence that not only did he participate, but that Weiss actually knew his name, or at least knew him by Rudy, and that he witnessed at least part of that aspect of the attack and him taking the Walkman in the pouch. I mean, his bottom line is you're not dealing with reasonable people that are trying to accurately relay the information about an event that happened. You're dealing with 60 IQ people, some of them who, by the way, even though they said they weren't, might have been on crack. You know, might have been all fucked up on something. We're attacking a woman in the middle of the dark in a frenzy during a night of wilding, and they're all trying to minimize their involvement and trying to get away with attempted murder, essentially. And so the accounts that you're going to get are not going to be the best accounts.
Man, this is so outrageous. This is such a psyop on white people, this case, because if you ask any person, any average person, and Devin Tracy did this in, I think, his Discord. He was asking people in his Discord. So there's a positive selection bias. And they were like, oh, it was such a miscarriage of justice. And I'm so glad they got that money and that they're speaking out. It's like, oh, my God.
Go to the YouTube comments on all the confession videos. And it's pages of normies going, it's so terrible what they did to these young men. You can tell he's innocent by the way he's nervous. It's like, yeah, he wouldn't be nervous because he raped a bitch and he's in the police department having to confess to it with his parents sitting next to him.
No. I've listened to a lot of actual false confessions that were exonerated through legitimate DNA evidence, like not like in this case. And in those cases, it's people like, I can't remember and I don't know. And then they're looking to answers from the police. None of them, not one that I've seen, has been super long form like these confessions. I don't think that they have any of the hallmarks. They don't seem tired. They don't seem hungry. They don't even seem particularly upset or stressed out.
Right.
Like if you watch these confessions, I don't know how anybody can come to the conclusion that these are false confessions.
Yeah, they're oddly nonchalant about it, if anything.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, the way that this has been. And so now 5 piece of shit black kids, violent black kids, are living out their lives as multimillionaires. And what they do for a living is motivational speaking about the wrongful imprisonment of people like them. It's just such an outrage. Like, it pains me to say this, but Donald Trump was right about this.
Yeah, I found this news report when I was doing research. Central Park 5's Corey Weiss, the guy we were just talking about, buys a $925,000 New York penthouse with views of the park 20 years after he was wrongly convicted of rape.
What year was this?
This is 2019.
Oh, it was probably a piece of shit then, $1 million.
Yeah, 2019, it says, Corey Weiss of the Exonerated Five has purchased a New York penthouse. It's small. Listen to the square footage. The $925,000 one-bedroom, 803-square-foot condo is in a luxury building in Harlem. Is there luxury buildings in Harlem?
Yeah, Harlem's pretty nice now.
Is it? Yeah. Weiss was one of the 5 teens wrongfully convicted of raping a Central Park jogger. He spent 14 years in prison due to the 1989 case, but in 2002 was exonerated. Weiss is the only one of the men who have stayed in New York City after the release. Weiss, along with Anton McRae, Kevin Richardson, Raymond Santana, and Yusef Salam, sued the state and received $41 million in 2014. They got an additional $3.9 million in 2016, and Weiss received $1.5 million from it. So, yeah, he's living in a luxury Harlem condo overlooking the park where he raped in his early youth.
Wow.
So that's what happens.
It's so awful. This is just the worst story. I'm so depressed.
This is the
now.
Jury, by the way. This is a picture of the jury. It's like all niggas. It's like, niggas.
Black people.
There's one white guy, or maybe two.
There's I see two. Rosie Perez in there.
Right.
Who
there's
else we got?
Some fat Jew. Yeah, Nick Fuentes' dad. You know, you got like, I mean, it's like a fucking UN over here. I mean, that's the thing is they weren't racistly convicted. The lead investigator was part black. I mean, it's all just a fucking farce. But anyway.
I know this was a tough one, guys.
Yes, it was.
It's difficult to listen to those confessions. I know this wasn't a super funny episode. I know that this was heavy, but this is important that people understand the ways that our justice system will bend over backwards to accommodate black people and minorities in general. Like, it's just incredible. These people are set for life because they raped and attempted murdered a woman that was just going about her business.
All right. Well, and on that note, I guess we should talk about our sponsor today, huh?
Yeah, totally. Antelope Hill Publishing is the premier American publishing house for informed and principled political dissidents. They publish essential authors like Dr. Kevin McDonald, David Irving, Carrie Bolton, Dr. Ricardo Duchesne, Josh Neal, and more. Their catalog includes original works on modern issues like the opioid crisis and the people and networks pushing transgenderism, as well as original historical sources from National Socialist Germany, Fascist Italy, Spain, Britain, Japan, and Hungary, many available in English for the first time exclusively through Antelope Hill. Their catalog also includes thrilling fiction novels and beautifully illustrated and wholesome kids books.
Fiction novels is something totally different.
I know. They're going to email me and be like, what? Their latest books include Il Dolce Massimo, a collection of Mussolini's oldest speeches and writings from his time as socialist organizer before he was expelled for advocating for Italian intervention in World War I. Germany in Stalin's crosshairs, the author I am interviewing this Friday on my YouTube channel, Blonde in the Belly of the Beast, history book by a former East German military officer using Red Army archives to demonstrate conclusively that the Soviet Union was planning to attack Germany first. Imperium of Thought, collection of writings from Dutch members of the SS about the world historical importance of national socialism and Hitler. Excuse me. Whatever your interest is, you are sure to find something you want at Antelope Hill Publishing. Check them out to support our friend and our sponsor. Please, 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 if you get anything from Antelope Hill, use the code OUTLAWS. You will get 10% off your first order. It really helps them. It really helps us keep the show alive. And we appreciate Antelope Hill. We appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
And even if it's not your first order, just put it in there anyway. So they're like, so they know.
Yeah.
I think they know. I think that's how it works. All right, so let's take a look at, you want to do yours, you want to do mine first? What do you want to do?
Sure, we can do mine. Let me reload. Man, I'm so depressed. That story just sucked it out of me.
It's a bummer.
Well, there's no justice. And, you know, even if, I guess there is some justice in that they served their term.
They did serve their sentences.
Woefully inadequate, though. Their sentences were woefully inadequate. But the real injustice here, outside, of course, what happened to Trisha and the other victims, is that they are going down in history as persecuted people despite committing this horrific crime. And it's right. Like the sense of injustice is just so heavy. All day I've been like, oh, I don't want to talk about this. And the irony of this is that a lot of people feel the same sense of injustice about the case, but they think it is because they were falsely imprisoned. Yeah.
Those are the people we call race trading idiots that should be put in the pit.
I know. I want to kill so many people involved in this.
Yeah, I did have a murderous rage about me all day long.
Oh, man.
It was hard to contain.
And then, like, I have to commiserate and kind of end up liking this black investigator and then, like, this other Jewish DA, like, this female Jewish DA. I'm like, she really got the raw end of this deal. I'm like, what is happening over here? I don't know how to feel about this. Lucian LaChance, no note. Thank you, sir. X-Gen Rebellion. When the law becomes unjust, the just become outlaws. Intellectual outlaws reject the Marxist paradigm. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Romega, no note. Mr. Me, hey, don't face fag for a woman. Bro code. What does this mean?
Oh, he's talking about how I have prevented my camera from working.
What is face fagging?
Showing my face.
Oh, so you shouldn't show your face because I'm putting pressure on you to show. Okay, gotcha.
Right.
All right. Right. This guy's totally right. I mean, Devin would never, listen, he's never, ever going to be persuaded by anything. He's truly a maverick, this guy. Important imports still suck. Can you start over? I just got here. Sorry, just be part of the replay gang. Blunderbuss, I'm surprised that JF Groiper Arepi is so favorable to the Nick First movement, especially since they've feuded before. I don't know. I mean, after JF made that video about me, I just think he can do no wrong. I'm like, you killed your wife. I don't give a shit. That's fine.
Well,
I'm joking.
Yeah, I actually had a little bit of a exchange with him about this topic. And I'll have to say, I'm pretty sure I came out the winner. Pretty sure I ratioed on every reply. And by the end of it, he had nothing to say other than trying to like someone else's reply that was substandard, I must say. But I'm pretty sure maybe you're French. And you just fucking keep out of it anyway, huh?
Well, he's French-Canadian, so, you know, twice.
No, obviously, I don't know what that is, other than I think there's people trying to clout chase Nick. And I'm just, you know, I'm just pointing that out. I don't think that's controversial. I think there's a lot of people who are think that if they lose the Groiper audience, then they can't exist on their own. And
why? Why would anybody think that? Well, it's so retarded.
It is retarded, but there are a lot of people that feel very threatened by, like, the handful of spurred responses they get on Twitter when they say something against Nick. And
well,
they
a Groiper, it doesn't mean you're always going to be a Groiper. All of us have gone through some sort of political evolution here. And I have to believe that his dumbass takes, like this Chud commentary, is just peeling people off.
No, it's yeah. I mean, he's going to be like a Steven Crowder, like I've been saying. Like, he's going to be a Steven Crowder. It's already happening. I don't know. I think there's some people that think, though, that that's, that's the way to go if you want to maintain an audience. And, you think that you can't afford to lose any more than you've already lost. So I think there's people that are like that.
Well, you did the right thing with Nick. Like, you came out early against him. You took the hit, and then you built credibility.
And then I was right. And then I was proven right.
Yeah. And so if you're one of those content creators that can be like, oh, well, fuck you guys if you don't like me anymore for saying what's true, and you can just wait it out, then you'll come out victorious and unbreakable. And I think that's what's happening here. Mr. Riffley, Ragstein Rev. Oy vey, shut it down. Check it out. It's a banger. Ragstein. Oy vey, shut it down. Okay, thank you, sir. Matthew Harrison says, roof hole revolution. Let me reload. You guys have been super generous tonight. Thank you. I think we're good over here.
All right, we got over here. We got Purple Cat Mint says, happy World Bee Day. Love the show. Thank you both. Is it World Bee Day today?
I don't know.
It might be. I actually...
No, Devin.
I was checking on my bees yesterday at a remote yard that I hadn't been to in a shameful amount of time. Not so many survivors. There was... I had like 10 hives there. Three of them are still going. And they're pissed, so.
Do you ever get emotionally attached to your bees?
Not the mean ones, and they're almost all mean now. So, like,
I
just stop caring. Because, in fact, if anything, you start to see them as, like, adversaries. Like, you're having to, like, you're enjoying stealing the honey from them. Because you're just like, that's right, you fuckers. As they're trying to sting you to death, you're just like, I'm taking your fucking honey. What's up now, bitch? Yeah, I've become very adversarial with some of my bees, and that whole yard, the reason why it's remote is they were all really pissy bees, and so the fact that they were all dead wasn't like a big loss.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then I saw an eagle fly overhead, which was kind of cool. It even made like the eagle sound. It was like, I can't do it.
That was pretty good.
It was kind of fun. So that was kind of neat. Yeah, but yeah, and all my swarm traps, except the one that I thought would have bees in it, have bees. So that was also good. So I did some bee stuff yesterday. Let's see here. Then we got Purple Catmint, says, Devin, please don't accuse your Africanized bees of chimping out. That would be racist. Free Chud the Builder. Yeah, no, they definitely chimp out. They chimp out fucking hard, sometimes I feel like I should just, like Chud the Builder, I should take out a gun and just fucking blow their hive away. But I don't do it. I haven't done it yet. Then we got Likes to Watch says, keep up the great work, you two. Well, I appreciate that.
Thank you so much.
Then we got the Shadow Band says, I'll have to be a VOD boy for this one, but thanks for all the great content. Well, I appreciate that. And hello to you in the future. All right, then we got Figure Nugget 88 says, I feel like Sandy Hook and or a Las Vegas M240B would be perfect for outlaws. I know they get litigious, but we need the breakdown. Well, I'd say Sandy Hook, obviously they are litigious so I'd have some reservations because I don't have, well, neither does Alex Jones, but I don't have like $6 billion or whatever the fuck it costs to cover that thing. But yeah, there's something up with that. And the
how much did
almost,
he owe? It was just an,
it's literally, it's
ridiculous.
Like $60 billion. It's something, it's might as well
bajillion?
Be like a trillion.
Yeah.
It might as well be like, infinity money. But yeah. And look, that to me, that just makes it look more suspicious. Honestly, it makes Sandy Hook look more suspicious. There's a lot of stuff that doesn't add up with that, and that's all I'll say. Yeah. We got Gorilla Hands says, am I the only one who is becoming fatigued? The good news is the normies are starting to wake up and notice who owns our governments in the West. Maybe things will eventually change for the best. Maybe.
No, man, that's so funny that you bring that up, because yesterday I messaged Cameron on Telegram and I was like, I don't give a shit about this Thomas Massie thing. Is this wrong? And he's like, can you call me right now? So I just talked to him about like why I don't care about this. And I realized that the reason that I don't care about this is that we're never going to get out of this through political solutions. So when people keep trying,
right,
it makes me exhausted. And now everybody's doing the same thing of like, it's rigged. The Jews rigged. I'm like, yeah, they fucking rig every election.
Yes.
Like,
so therefore,
like, why are we even doing this anymore? So like, I just don't care. I just have no feelings about this Massey thing because it's just so predictable.
Right.
I don't know. And then Cameron did his silver linings bullshit. We'll talk about it tomorrow on the reset, but he's probably right that people are going to wake up in droves if they still were being, led to the slaughter by constitutional conservatism. So we'll see what he has to say.
We'll see. I'm not holding my breath. Then we got the Supreme Rabbi Satan has a bunch of monkey emojis. I don't know what that could possibly mean. Then we got Arisen Ryan says, Davone, am I crazy or do you Davone struggle with pronouncing the number 9? I swear most of the time it sounds like I'm hearing a G at the end of 9. I don't know. Do I say 9 weird?
No.
7, 8, 9?
Yeah, you do kind of say it weird.
Do I?
Say it again.
7, 8, 9. 9, 11. 911.
Are you joking?
No, I'm just, that's how I say it.
Is that actually how you say it?
Yeah, 911.
911.
Yeah, I guess I do put a little bit of a G in there, huh?
How did this happen? Did you have a stroke?
I'm going to say it's like regional accent. How about that?
Like how I say bagel?
Yeah, that sounds weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, see?
9?
I also say crayon instead of crayon, and that makes people
But
outraged.
No, it's crayon.
It's crayon. Yeah, yeah, crayon. So, huh. Yeah. 9 crayon. I have 9 crayons. I don't know. No one's ever told me I say it weird, but maybe I do.
Welcome to the internet where people can make you insecure about something you've never thought about before.
I'm sure I've got like a list of, a very long list of things I say weird. Then we got Mojack says, finally catching y'all live. Hair looks great, Rebecca. Ew. Wish me luck. I'm flying into the true belly of the beast, San Francisco. And I live to offend niggas, homos, commies, and every retard.
It pains me to say this too, but I heard that San Francisco's looking pretty good these days.
Is it?
I've heard from some credible sources that they've like really gotten their shit together.
No more poo streets?
I mean, I can't imagine they have eliminated all the poo, right?
San Francisco's just like it's just kind of, even when it's nice, it's shitty though, right?
Yeah.
Because it's really not the homeless people. It's the people, you know, like that have homes, really, you know, in San Francisco. Because I lived right outside the city. And so I spent some time there and working with people in that area. And it was just like, I fucking hated it. I hated everyone I met, like everyone I met.
Yeah.
I'd go to a bar and I would just like, everyone I talked to, I'd hate them. Like within 5 minutes of meeting them.
I hate you.
Yeah. And that's why I left, because I couldn't handle it anymore. I was like, I can't meet anyone that I have even like anything in common with at all. The dating scene was a fucking nightmare.
Oh,
I mean, so many whores, by the way. So many whores. Like, I mean like whores. Like,
what are we talking here?
I'm not going to, well, whores. I'm just going to tell you, a lot of loose women in San Francisco with like no morals whatsoever who don't have any interest in you taking them out to dinner first. It was a really
weird. Well, what are they getting out of it?
Well, no, I'll tell you, I was weirded out. This is the only time this has ever happened to me. I matched with someone on a dating app.
What app?
It might have been Tinder or something. I mean, this was years ago. This is many years ago. And I started talking. I was like, oh, you know, she seems kind of normal. Like, she looked like a normal girl and had like a tech job, I think. And I was like, I'd talk to her. Before I could get to like the, hey, maybe I take you out to like, you know, like coffee or something like that. Her proposal was, I drive to her house. I park in her driveway. She would come down and fuck me in my car I'm assuming her husband or boyfriend was in the house. And then she would go back. And like, that was her proposal for the evening. And I was like, yeah, no, that's kind of weird. Sorry. That just doesn't sound like a fun time. I mean, obviously in a weird way, sort of, not really. I mean, on paper, but like when you really think about it, you're like, no, because how many other guys, first of all, have got this message, you know what I mean? But yeah, just shit like that. Like, just, we're talking, it's San Francisco. So you're talking about just like total psychopaths, people that the sexual revolution never stopped. And so I got followed by like some 4-foot gay Mexican. Maybe this was Nick, because this was a few years ago before I knew who he was. But I went out one night and this fucking guy followed me like bar to bar. And he didn't speak English, but he kept trying to talk to me in like this lispy. Yeah, it was so fucking weird. Like I ended up just getting a cab and going home because I thought he was going to try to like rape me or something weird like that.
Well, he was for sure going to try to rape you.
It was so weird.
You could have just pushed him over though. It's
just such a degenerate city. And like everyone that you meet, like I met my first like actual Satanist. Like, I mean, like full blown. And I don't mean like that I'm LARPing as a Satanist because I'm a libertarian. I mean like, I pray to Satan and I actually believe in the power of Satan, kind of Satanist, in San Francisco. It's just a fucking total hell. And again, this was, I don't know, it was like, it's been a long time now, almost not quite 10 years ago, but it was a long time ago. No, actually it was about 10 years ago. We're getting old.
How old are you?
Too old. This is about 10 years ago. This was before, this was the reason I know it was, because I've been doing this for 10 years, and I started doing this like right after I left San Francisco.
Okay.
So it was over 10 years ago.
Well, I'm 38. Devin, you're
older than that. All right. So then we got TMK 1335 says, I've been monitoring symptoms after being bitten by a Lone Star tick a week ago. Had flu symptoms for a few days. But according to Dr. Grok, I should be fine. Still a very stressful experience. Do either of you think the tick explosion is part of another WEF scheme? If so, holy shit, we have the willpower to avoid a COVID shot, but they still found a way to reach out and touch you. What are your thoughts on this tick stuff that people are talking about?
Okay, so I haven't done enough research on it to opine. My mom's totally on board. So I don't know. There might be something there. I don't put it past the government or anything like that. But I'm not seeing massive widespread health issues. But then I wasn't really with COVID. I need to do more research. I'm not particularly concerned about it. I will say that. Maybe I should be.
Well, we don't have ticks here, so I don't worry about that. The desert is pretty tick-free. But I will say that I have heard stories, it's all anecdotal evidence, that there have been absurd amounts of ticks in parts of the country that do get ticks. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. I've also heard, and I've never researched this, that there is actually good evidence that suggests that the whole Lyme disease thing from ticks, there really is a connection to a government lab, you know, going back to like the 1950s or something like that. Like that's not just crazy town. Like that actually.
That's true. But then all of this has been confounded by people saying they have Lyme's disease when really they just have Munchausen's or something.
Right, right. No, trust me.
It's like I have fibromyalgia and Lyme's disease. I'm like, you're fucking crazy. You have borderline personality disorder is what you have.
Yeah, so it's tough to know. But as far as the actual, I'll have to research it sometime. But yeah, I wouldn't be. Look, you sound like you're making through getting through the symptoms there. So yeah, just keep an eye on it. It's possible. I mean, I wouldn't put a. I mean, in terms of like a tactic they would use, yeah. I mean, why wouldn't they? Then we got Gorilla Hand says, I live and grew up in the Northeast. New York is a crime-infested open sewer, as with most of the cities up here now. You can't even take public transportation up here without an incident with teens.
Where is he again?
He just says the Northeast.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, those teens.
I don't know if there's a whole lot of places in America where public transportation is like a walk in the park, just to be honest. Like, because I've taken public transportation in several major cities, including New York, and I never felt like I was safe to relax, you know? Like, I was always in attack mode. My head was always on a swivel when I was in, anytime on any kind of public transportation.
And when I was in Japan, I would just fall asleep. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Like, nothing's happening here. This is great.
Yeah. And if only.
All right.
Then we got Arch Stanton says, any chance of an Ahmaud Arbery stream? It drives me nuts that even many normicons still believe he was just a nice guy or a nice young Negro who got lynched while jogging. Yeah.
I covered that story so much on the Matt and Blonde show.
Like when it was happening?
Yeah. I kind of forgotten about it. I don't think that this is kind of a household name. Do you? I mean.
No. I mean, it's a shame that they threw the book at the guys, though.
Yeah, of course.
But, yeah. All right. Then we got Tom O'Hawk says, I still don't understand how so many white people still think nons are the same as us. You guys should do a show about Hurricane Katrina. Well, I did a huge one about that. That should have woken up everyone, but said they didn't.
I know, right?
Look up Potato Hurricane Edition. I know that sounds weird, but I think it's in the Insomnia Stream Potato Hurricane Edition, and I cover it in great detail. I think I also talk a lot of shit about Kanye before that was fashionable. Let's see here. Then we got Finger Nugget says the Lone Star tick allergy is actually not a new phenomenon. As a child, I was allergic to red meat maybe for 10 years. My throat and esophagus would painfully contract. I eventually recovered. Oh, there you go. Finger Nugget says that it's not to worry too much about it unless you like meat. Figure Nugget also says, researching my sudden beef and deer allergy alerted my attention to the Lone Star tick. Maybe it's Long Star. You put Long Star this time. And even in the 2010s, it was already a known issue. I spent my teens avoiding red meat. Today, it's my favorite. So there you go. Huh. Maybe you can build up a tolerance to it. Then we got Great Wahite says, this story is infuriating. It makes me want to visit the grocery store. Yes, yes. Yes, it does. I was having grocery store fantasies the entire time I was researching it, especially listening to those fucking interviews. Because I've heard it way more than once because I was trying to fix the audio. I know it was shit, guys, but you should hear the originals. You can't.
It was so bad. Yeah.
Yeah. So I did what I could. The Shadow Band says, sheer scale by which our justice system has been perverted by standards of evidence, admissibility, Miranda rights, etc. Yeah, it is. Well, it was a system meant for white people to
white
be
people.
Every participant,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
White people were supposed to be the judges, the juries, the lawyers, and the people being tried. And when you start replacing white people in that equation, the whole thing falls apart. Then we got Clancaster with a big dono. Clancaster with the big dono says, sorry if you've already answered this. Thoughts on calling the credit card company to reverse charges to Entropy Super Chats. Last I heard, you suggested waiting until you heard from Entropy. Well, I did hear from Entropy this weekend. And
tell me, Devin, do you have your money?
I do not have the money, but I have been told that the money is coming, possibly... by beginning the end of this week. So we'll see. I'm a little more optimistic
so
now that I've, you know, now that they responded to me a week late. But, you know, hopefully, I'll tell you what, I will tell you this. I have talked to others who were owed money that have received most of their money.
That's terrible. terrible. Like, why wouldn't they pay at all?
I don't know.
Pay at all.
I talked to someone who was also owed a large amount of money, and they said they received most of it. And that's all. I'm not allowed. You know, I can't say anything else. But they said that. So we'll see. Let's, you know, maybe this weekend we'll look and maybe a transfer will have taken place. That would be nice. I wish they'd been a little less salty and a little more apologetic in their response, but they responded.
Yeah, for real. They did respond, though.
They did respond. Denise the Celt says, FYI, Ken Burns has been married twice. Both wives are Jews. Most of his staff members are Jews. He lives in a 96% white neighborhood, very rich. Walpole. I don't know what that is.
Where is that?
I don't know. Population 3,970. No foreigners. Burns is an infuriating race traitor. Yeah, well, he's the worst kind because he's the kind that wants to enjoy what he refuses to allow anyone else access to, and that is a safe white neighborhood.
Yep.
Tomahawk says, as the father of a young woman, this story makes me want to do things I can't say online. Yes, I can agree with that. I was having those exact same thoughts. The more you look into this, the more it's just like, why are these people alive? And let alone millionaires, they just shouldn't be alive.
Multi-millionaires.
Arch Stanton says, Rebecca made a great point. Really? No, I'm not going to read the rest of this. That's just probably lies after that. The 65 IQ... the 65 IQ hominid could never have remembered all those details in the story if the story wasn't real. That's all the evidence you need. That is true. That's a good point.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, you do make good points. That was the amount of detail and an unprompted detail and detail that sounded natural. Mm-hmm. I was sold on that, that being a genuine to some extent. I mean, obviously he's still minimizing, like, I was just holding her leg. I wasn't, you know, look, if I had to rape someone, I'll just rape him. I'm not going to beat the shit out of him like this guy.
I can imagine. Who says this at a convention?
That's almost what makes it genuine, though, because you know he could imagine raping someone, you know? That's what made it sound genuine, the fact that he didn't have the self-awareness to realize what it sounded like.
Don't say that, you stupid.
Like, look, this is my first rape, okay, guys? It's my first rape. I'm never going to rape again, okay? I've never raped before.
That's when the little rape happened.
It's just a little rape, yeah. That's what makes it feel genuine, because he was just like this retarded, you know, psycho. Yeah. Figure Nagget says, if this is my first rape, doesn't turn into a sound clip button. Look, I didn't even know that was coming. I'm going to snap. You have to use that.
Yeah, I know.
We'll have to maybe figure out a way of finding humor in that dark, dark episode there. Professor Chaos says, I'll check out the replay later. Keep up the good work, guys. Well, I appreciate that. Great Wahite says, Rebecca mentioned destroyed cities at the beginning. Gary, Indiana gets my vote.
Oof.
It's so bad.
Oh, man. I heard Gary is terrible. What is it? Is it like 80% black now?
Is it? I've never been to... I may have driven through Indiana at some point. But
okay, it is 78% black.
Jesus Christ.
Non-Hispanic whites are 11%. Hispanic Latino, 8%.
What white is staying there? Like what?
Old timers that are like, get out of here, you stupid spicks. And a word that I am not ready. I'm just not ready to say it.
Yeah.
I'm not.
You will. All of us, this is from Figure Nagget, all of us violently fucked the hell out of her, except me. Exactly. I was just touching her leg. I felt kind of bad. My friend was laughing. I was like, it's not that funny. Why are you laughing?
It's only kind of funny. It's just a little rape.
Mycock 420 Blazin says, if only we could have put these naggers in the roof hole.
I know, right?
Absolutely. Very generous, by the way, Mike Hawk. Appreciate that.
Man, I'm pro-life. I'm like a staunch pro-life advocate. I can't think of a single situation where I would have an abortion. when I was reading.
Well, not you, but I can. I'm starting to get a little wishy-washy on pro-life.
I know. So I'm listening to the story. I'm like, God, couldn't their mothers have just like done what all these other black women? Like,
well, really, honestly, what it is the moral thing should be forced sterilization.
Like, yeah.
Everyone involved in that wilding that wasn't put to death, which should have been all of them, should have been forced sterilized, and they're all their family members. Anyone has any immediate family members should have been forced sterilized.
And now those five guys have like 30 kids.
Yeah, billions of kids. There's like billions of rapies running around now.
God. And imagine the women that would hook up with him after something like that.
Well, you're assuming it was voluntary. All right, then we got...
Oh, no, do you think it's a bunch of rape babies?
A bunch of rape babies shit. Running around? It's possible.
Oh, God.
Yeah, like you said, look, I'll rape, okay? I'm just not going to beat the shit out of him when I rape. So maybe these are the ones he didn't beat the shit out of. I mean, he's got like
God.
A... He's got that
penthouse. So depressed.
Fred Flintstone says, hey, Devin, found you and started my reawakening. Headed backwards through your streams until I understand the grocery store lore. How far back am I going to have to go? It might be grocery store edition, I think, right? That's quite a few years
ago.
How
long ago was it?
A few years ago. I mean, the reference isn't that tricky. It's just that... actually, you have to go to the one right before the grocery store edition, I think. Because I had to make... the grocery store sound in response to people complaining that I thought the grocery store tactic was not the smartest. Let me just put it this way.
Oh, thank God.
If you're going to go to a grocery store to do what some people have done, maybe go somewhere else where there's fatter fish to fry. That's all I'm going to say.
Fatter right. fish to fry.
Then we got Mike Hawk 420 Blazing. Says gas the kites now, race war now. Kites, he says, like flying a kite.
Kites. It's fine. They just said kites, YouTube.
They're flying a kite, huh?
There's dude, it's been almost 3 hours that I've had an eyelash in my eye, and I just got it out. At the end of the fucking show, God.
I was wondering what you were doing over there.
Dude, it was driving me, because it was like really painful. Like, I got to get this out, and it just came out.
I just thought it was
sorry, guys.
Fatigue.
No, sorry about the replay. I had to get it. I had to get it out of my face.
I thought the Nick fatigue was giving you a migraine or something.
Are you saying Nick or Nig? Because I'm Nig. Fatigued from both.
Well, and Nick too, I guess. I mean, is there really a difference? So we got I believe that's it. I think we're
okay,
all tapped out over here.
Now let's go to entropy.
No.
Okay.
Never again.
Never, 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 never. Okay, I think we're good over here. Thank you guys so much. We stream every Wednesday. I am Rebecca Hargraves. You can find me on my YouTube channel at Blonde in the Belly of the Beast. You can find me on X at blondes_tweets. You can find me on Instagram at Blonde Beast. Also follow me on Rumble. What is my Rumble? At Blonde Beast. And I do a show with Cameron McGregor on Thursdays. That is called The Reset. You can find that on my YouTube channel. And then I have an interview with the author that we spoke of earlier. His name is Kurt for Antelope Hill on Friday on my YouTube channel. So check that out.
All right. And you can go to Twitter and follow me, black_pilled. And then obviously Rumble, Blackpilled on Rumble. Or you can go to blackpilled.com. We'll take you to the Odyssey page, although that might change at some point. Odyssey is starting to become a wasteland a little bit. I'm holding on. I would love for there to be a resurgence there, but I think they need to figure out their monetization in a better way. But anyway, appreciate you guys coming by. In the meantime, you have a good rest of your week. Make sure you tune in to the Insomnia stream this Saturday, 10 o'clock, same bat channel here on Rumble and on Odyssey. So you guys all have a good day.
Good night. Bye-bye.